is that guy?
He was a killer, first time that I saw him. Wondered how many girls he had left and left haunted. But if he's a ghost, then I can be a phantom, holding him for ransom. Some boys are trying too hard. He don't try it all.
That's life.
It is what it is.
So positive.
You know, that's life.
Yeah, one of those days, weeks, months.
I'll be there for you. Yeah.
All right. Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuard.com. My name is Matt. That is Michael. We're going to talk about MMA and stuff this week. You can listen to the show on the website, halfguarded.com, or iTunes, or Google Play. I think we like them to listen to it on the website, though, if I'm not correct.
I'm not really picky.
Okay, well, we'll take whatever we can get. This past weekend, there were actually two shows. There was a Bellator show, but we're going to worry about that later, because UFC 217 is the big story. Granted, it's a little late to talk about it now, but historically speaking, and I'm not a big hyperbole person, this is one of my favorite shows ever and probably one of the better shows I've seen, especially the main card. Just those top three title fights were unbelievable. You had upsets in every one, I think. And it was just a really fun show overall. You were there cage side. Did you have the same feeling, or did it come off differently in the building?
It started out, I mean, the show was fine as it began. It was just kind of there. Like, it was fun. Like, every fight, again, they happen, nothing spectacular. And then the last three fights just kind of snuck up on you. Because the first one with Rose and Joanna, you're like, huh, okay. And then the TJ fight, you're like, holy shit, that was really good. And then George St. Pierre, and by the end of that, next thing I know, I'm standing there as the arena's emptied out, and St. Pierre's still in the middle of the cage celebrating. I'm like, oh, that was something else there. To me, like, the only thing that, like, would hold the show back from being in that upper echelon of all time is,
yeah,
basically that it was really only three great fights. They were really great fights, but the rest of the show was blah. And also, it didn't have that one, like, epic war. I mean, I guess TJ and Cody was pretty epic, but for the most part, they were kind of like, they were surprising, but
yeah,
two of the three were just routes.
I mean, as far as, like, finishes and stuff goes, I mean, even on the undercard, the six fights on the undercard, five of them had a finish.
Yeah, they did, but they seemed to just kind of happen. Like, I don't know, it felt like a lot of the fights were there.
Yeah.
And then they have a finish.
Well, it was funny, there was some, I can't remember it, the Fox Sports.
I forgot about that one, yeah.
The Fox Sports 1 card didn't really tape for me, or record, or whatever we call that, DVR for me, because there was, like, baseball on before, so I missed the first 45 minutes of it, so I didn't see the Gall fight. But I know Sahabi's little brother got knocked out with that spinning back elbow. Like, he got destroyed. Like, there's just a lot of crazy finishes, and it was a wild show.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like Sahabi's fight, and you mentioned kind of passing there the OSP fight. They both were fights where they kind of were boring, and then you had this just legendary knockout almost. So it was kind of like, you'd be like, oh, look at that.
As far as attendance goes, it said 18,201 people attending and did a $6.2 million gate, which for New York isn't crazy, but it's definitely one of the biggest gates of the year for them. Obviously, probably the most well-attended show of the year, too, unless there was a Vegas show that did better. But
I don't think anything in Vegas can do bigger than that.
I didn't know if that new T-Mobile arena could get 20,000 in it, I thought, but I could be wrong. Either way, show was a success. Afterwards, Dana said they did well over a million buys, which sounds crazy to me, but maybe more people know about GSP than some people thought, which I think we both argued in favor of. We thought the show would be a success, so we were right again. And
well, these things happen every week here at HalfGuarded.com and MMA and Stuff, the podcast with the fast, gas last match fast. That goes real fast when you listen to it for fun.
Yes. So in the main event, we had George St. Pierre defeating Michael Bisping by technical submission with a rear naked choke. It was 4:23 in the third round. There's like a handful of fights I can remember. I'm not a real excitable person. I'll just sit there and watch the fight and be like, yeah, all right, that was cool, whatever. I can remember the Brock Lesnar-Shane Carwin fight, like being on the edge of my seat for that because I'm like, oh, my God, Carwin's killing Brock. It's over. Brock's going to be done. He's never going to fight again. He survived that first round, comes out, gets the choke, and wins. I jumped out of my chair for that. And this fight, I jumped out of my chair. I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe St. Pierre just did that. Because he was tired. He was bleeding everywhere. I thought he looked slow. But somehow, I think he hit a left hand that knocked Bisping down, landed a bunch of nasty elbows on the ground, ground and pound. Then he kind of just let Bisping get up a little bit, took his back, choked him out. Bisping's out cold, completely unconscious. GSP did it, beat the bigger guy, came back after 4 years. It was just like, for GSP, a storybook ending, and I was happy for him, and it was a great, great climactic fight.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of people now talk about thinking GSP looked kind of tired, and I watched, at least in person, I saw his mouth opening a little bit. The whole fight, it just seemed like, oh, he's a way better athlete here. Like, Bisping looked continuously like he was laboring and just couldn't keep up with St. Pierre. And I don't necessarily mean like cardio, perhaps it was. I think a lot of good just beat the speed and the technique that St. Pierre showed, that mentally, I think Bisping was just like, what the fuck just happened there? Where did this takedown come from? Because it was crazy. Like, I mean, the physical shape that St. Pierre was in, I was right there and I kept staring at his thighs. Because they were like these hams, just these tanned hams, and you could like almost see them pulsing with it, with every beat of his heart, but they were calm, and I'm just like, whoa, like, I've seen St. Pierre before, I've seen that person before, but I don't know, maybe I'm just smarter now. I just looked at him like, wow, my brother texted me, he goes, that man is all core, like, he is a tree trunk. He's not a, like, I don't know if St. Pierre's on stuff or whatever, but he's not a bodybuilder looking. Like, his arms aren't huge or anything. It's that fucking core. It's my word. Whatever he's doing, he did in those 3 years off. Fucking A, man. I guess alien probes really do change you.
So, obviously, with the win, GSP is now the, I guess, technically undisputed middleweight champion, but you've got Robert Whittaker on the sideline as the interim champ. Do you think GSP takes that fight? Is Whittaker a big enough name for him? Or do you see him... Like what's he going to do now?
I really have no idea. St. Pierre's
like, I don't know. You can't top this. Yeah, I don't think. How do you move up a weight class, take 4 years off, win at MSG, in that way? He's just bleeding everywhere. He had that huge gash on the top of his forehead, the cut on his nose. It was like I think I jumped out of my chair and I said, that man's a hero. Like, he was like, he's a freaking hero. I'm like, that was unbelievable because it looked like he was going to be in trouble with those cuts. They might have stopped it in between rounds. Bisping might have landed a couple more jabs, opened him up. Who knows? And it was just like out of nowhere. And I don't know how you top that. Like,
you can't top it.
There's like a card coming up in Perth. Like, yeah. I don't see GSP going to Perth to fight Robert Whittaker. I mean, although it would make sense in a way. But
they fucking threw Ronda down there to get killed.
True. That's true.
They do like Australia a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking kangaroo humpers.
But I mean, the one thing with Whittaker is he used to be a welterweight. He used to fight at 170 pounds, and he was less successful at the lighter weight than he is at middleweight. So I don't think there'd be a huge size difference between the two guys. But even so, Whittaker's young, he's fast, and he doesn't have a name that would necessarily mean money for St. Pierre.
Yeah, it's such a... I mean, on the one hand, part of me because St. Pierre is such a complex individual as far as fighters go. And so I really think it's either going to be Whittaker or McGregor. Either he's going to give in to the, I want to be in the biggest fight possible, legendary type of deal, and then that's McGregor. Or he's in the pure, I want to challenge myself as a martial artist thing, and that's Whittaker. Otherwise, I don't, what's he going to do, go down 170 and fight Tyron Woodley? Like, what the fucking do? Like,
well, the one thing that would be kind of cool, if depending on how crazy he's feeling right now, is you go down, you fight Woodley, you win the title there, then you go down to 155 and you fight McGregor and beat McGregor there, then you retire. That would be the story. Simultaneously hold three titles at once. And granted, we're talking about a 36-year-old guy who's torn both his ACLs and isn't what he used to be.
Yeah.
Like we're getting a little amped up here, I know that, but at the same time, could that be something that's going on in his head? And that was, he said he had a game plan all along.
It could be. I mean, to me, that's really tough just because he doesn't fight that much. Like, even when he was out, like, back then, still, like, maybe twice a year, maybe. I feel like if you're St. Pierre, you can't be planning out multiple title reigns across three divisions and hoping that everybody's going to, you know, not screw up. And plus, you have to fight Tyron Woodley.
Right.
Like, my word. Talk about risking everything. You're going to fucking risk the fight with Connor for Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
But again, if you, I don't know, St. Pierre, he's a weirdo. He's got a lot of money, and he runs the whole company. I don't know, really, Connor does, but still.
It came to me, too, that he was right all along. It was like he moved up in weight. He asked for that Bisping fight. He said he was going to get a finish. He's like, I wasn't happy in the past with my performances. I'm gonna go for finishes. I'm going to get them. And it's like he did it.
Hey, didn't I call it last week? I think I predicted him by rear naked choke.
Did you?
I think so. I know that I picked him to win on this show.
Yeah.
I think I picked him to win by rear naked choke. I know I picked somebody to win by rear naked choke.
Does Bisping retire after this?
No.
No.
Nah, I mean, he even said he's not going to retire. He's like, I'm not going to have the last thing that people ever remember me for, losing to George St. Pierre. So I think he fights one more time, and I would guess it's,
in England, probably. Yeah, the next Manchester English, or something. Yeah.
I think the next English card is it at Manchester?
I don't know.
If it is, I think that's where he fights. And if I'm him, that's what I would do. And then I'd move back to California, because, you know, it's not England.
Who could he fight? I was thinking, like, Vitor or somebody. Like, an older guy who he could beat and win with a name and have a decent shot at winning. I'm not thinking... Like, they could throw him in with Yoel Romero, because that was a fight, but I don't think Bisping wants Romero.
Yeah, fucking
do it. Even though they were hyping that fight like crazy a while ago.
Do the Henderson rubber match.
Maybe.
Why not, maybe, man?
You could, I guess. I wonder how much Hendo would want for that.
Who could Bisping get into a little talking shit kind of fight where he'd still win? Who's at a loudmouth at 170? Colby Covington or something.
I don't know if he would beat Colby Covington, to be honest. I mean, Dana's saying that Whitaker's going to get GSP next, but I don't put as much stock into what Dana says in 2017 as I did a few years ago. So we'll see what happens with good old GSP. In the one of the semi, can you have more than one semi-main event?
Sure.
Oh, okay, great. We had TJ Dillashaw defeating Cody Garbrandt by knockout at 241 in the second round. Garbrandt actually rocked Dillashaw in the first at, like, with 10 seconds down, and might have been able to finish the fight if he had another 30 seconds or something, but Dillashaw recovered in between rounds, came out strong, and basically, I think he landed a head kick.
He landed a head kick that basically ended it, and then... Yeah, then Garbrandt...
punches on the ground.
Yeah, then when Garbrandt got back up, TJ hit him with another big left hook, and then he fucked him on the mat with some ground and pound.
Yeah. Garbrandt kind of complained that it was early.
No.
There was, I'm not saying it was. at this point, if you're turtled up and taking punches and not moving, I think they should end it. Like, every fighter should know you can't do that. It's a sign I want to say you're looking for a way out, but it's definitely not intelligently defending yourself getting punched in the back of the head. Anyway, awesome scene at the very end of the fight. Garbrandt sprung up pretty quick, and Dillashaw just gets right in his face and screams, like nose to nose in his face. And Garbrandt's still kind of hazy out of it, just kind of staring at him. But again, I mean, depending on whose stories you believe, if you believe the alpha male stories or Dillashaw's stories, if you're a Dillashaw fan, this was the greatest thing ever. I don't know if he has many fans, but you might have got out of your seat and cheered at that moment, too.
Well, I'll say this, that yeah. I was talking to my brother about this fight the other day, and I don't know if anybody in MMA history has ever lost as much in a fight as Cody Garbrandt did here, because he lost his undefeated streak, he lost his championship, he lost a grudge match, but he lost a real grudge match, and he got knocked the fuck out. That's a bad loss. Like, that's one of those things where when it was over, I was like, oh, man, you talked all that shit, and you called him out as a bad guy. Like, you really – like, if Garbrandt had won, I think it could have been okay, because it kind of would have been one of those, like, look, TJ, you left, but you took your beating, and now we're square type of deals. But, like, TJ looked at Team Alpha Male and said, eh, fuck you guys. You guys suck. He betrayed them, left them, came back, and then beat up their best guy. Like, oh, man, there ain't no happy ending for Cody Garbrandt here.
No. I think these guys will fight again someday.
I really hope so, because I think that they're two of the top three guys in the division. And fuck me, man, TJ Dillashaw is good. Oh,
yeah,
and he fought differently too. He didn't move like he used to. He's a little more patient, and he's got a little bit of a knock. I don't know if he's got a little knockout power. Cody, maybe he's got a chin issue.
Well, I mean, I remember those Barao fights. Barao looked unstoppable until he ran into Dillashaw, and Dillashaw, I don't want to say ended Barao's career, but after those fights, Barao hasn't been the same at all.
Well, it was Dillashaw and USADA probably.
So the presumption was the winner of Donna Cruz and Jimmy Rivera would fight Dillashaw, the winner of this fight. But I don't know if you heard the news. It just came out. Cruz is out of that fight at UFC 219. Broken arm.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, so, this poor fucking guy. I mean, clearly Dominic Cruz. But what did he do to get this kind of karmic justice? Like, Weinstein does all that stuff, and he's like a millionaire. Cruz must be like John Wayne Gacy in his spare time or something. Man, does the universe have it out for him.
Yeah, a broken arm is a weird injury too, right? Like, I think this is news just coming out, so maybe it's not a broken arm, but, like, you never hear of a broken arm in training. Like, how the hell did he break his arm? That is a bizarre injury for a fighter a month out from an important fight in their career.
All we'd think is it's got to be something wrestling related. Probably got taken down and posted on his arm.
Like Coleman or something. Yeah,
something weird like that. Yeah. Or you know, he could have got slammed on the shoulder. Funny.
Yeah.
Or he sneezed.
So they got to find an opponent for Jimmy Rivera. Well, I don't know who that would be. The other person who says they're willing to fight TJ Dillashaw is Uriah Faber. He says he's willing to come out of retirement for one more fight against Dillashaw. Does that pique your interest?
Fuck yeah, it does.
Does it?
Fuck yeah. My God. Just because it's such a... Like, normally I don't like this shit. Like, UFC's getting really fucking weird. They're really losing credibility on some of these title fights and all that. But there's something about this just because... The bantamweight division really is so fucking awesome when you think of all the very natural and real drama that's been involved there. It's all been around Team Alpha Male and Uriah Faber. Like, he's been at the center of all of it. And the idea of, like, him fighting for the title, like, nobody would in the world would think he's earned it. But, I don't know, because it's TJ, I think people would be like, we want to believe that you can will yourself to win the really big, vicious championship fight like this, and to be justice, and it's just such a good story. I want to see that. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
John Lineker is offered to step in against Jimmy Rivera, so we might have a
substitute there for Dominic Cruz. I like that.
Yeah, I would watch that. Although I don't think it's a real good main event for the end of the year pay per view. But
well, neither was Cruz and Jimmy Rivera.
I know, but that was, so far that was like the top fight. Dana has said they're trying to get Connor for that show, but they're really running out of time, man. That's only what, 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away. Prior to that, we had Rose Namajunas defeating Joanna Jędrzejczyk by TKO at 3:03 in the first round. I don't even know what to say here. Namajunas just outclassed Joanna. I mean, that's it.
It was weird.
Like, I don't think Rose got hit. Like, she barely got touched.
Yeah, they were thrown fast. And it's just like Rose like was just square up and kind of, you just see it. Everyone, it was like Anderson and Forrest Griffin. Just sometimes fighters have that perfect deal where the world is in slow-mo for them. And it seemed like they was in slow-mo here. Because Rose was just like, it was like, oh, what the fuck just happened here? Where did this come from? Like, you want to look like shit.
Yeah, it was funny because Joanna was like much bigger on TV. She looked like 10 pounds heavier than Rose. Yeah, I thought so. And then, in addition, it was like Joanna got rocked early, then dropped, and just pounded on the ground. And she like tapped. She tapped to strikes, which
well, she claimed she didn't.
I know, but she was tapping. I don't know if you watched it on TV, but she tapped.
It did look like she tapped there, yeah.
She tapped, and Rose got up, and I think it was McCarthy waved off the fight. But she got her ass handed to her. She was out on her feet when she was up. She didn't know what the hell was going on. And this, to me, out of these three fights, was probably the biggest upset.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So good on Rose. Her post-fight speech, a lot of people liked it. I thought it was kind of corny, but she's talking about being positive and being a good person, and that's cool, but she didn't sell it well, I didn't think, but whatever. New champ there. Do you think Joanna should get an immediate rematch based on defending the title 5 times? Is she a rematch? Okay.
Yep. Just give it to her right away. I think once you start, if you've defended your title so many times that you almost broke the all-time record for your sex, then, you get a rematch.
Just sounded funny.
I know, I gotta really narrow it here, but.
I'm gonna get past it. I've never broken any records for my sex. Well, looking at the division, I mean, it's not like there's a ton of huge names at the top.
Maybe Jessica Andrade would be the only one that could do it.
Yeah, I guess. And did Gadela come off the last? She's ranked third, but
Gadela
either
just got
way,
beat by Andrade.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, she got.
Yeah,
got
she was
fucked beat out of her.
Yeah.
Maybe
let's
give it to Paige VanZant.
Well, we'll get to that later. She's in line possibly for another title shot, depending on who you ask. So good on Rose. Upset win. Another crazy fight. Crazy finish. One of the only fights on the show that didn't have a finish was Stephen Thompson beating Jorge Masvidal by decision. 30-26, which didn't make sense, and then 30-27 on the other two cards. Masvidal just couldn't get inside. He was taking a lot of kicks. Thompson's just an odd striker. He's got that karate background and weird stance and everything, and Masvidal just couldn't do much damage at all.
Yeah, I mean, the fight was actually about as entertaining as I could hope for from this fight, I think. Masvidal made it. You know, sucks that he lost, but I'm glad we get to see what comes next for Wonderboy.
Yes, there's rumors out there about Darren Till.
No, those are confirmed. I saw that shit running on the crawl on ESPN.
Yeah, we should double check that.
What was weird is that they ran that on the crawl and they went out of their way to say like Darren Till's fight on blah 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 has been pulled and he'll be facing Wonderboy in fucking wherever, England. And yeah. I don't know, I was just like, wow.
The way I read it was Dana said it was on, but I don't think either guy signed a bout agreement at this point.
No, but I mean, look, are either one of them in a position to really say no? I mean,
well, Stephen Thompson's dad saying they don't want to take a step back and fight Darren Till.
Well, that's because his dad always has an idea for a final solution to the problems in front of him.
Paulo Costa defeated Johnny Hendricks by TKO. This was the opener of the main card at 1:23 in the second round.
This one I know I called. I know I called Paulo in the second round.
Hendricks is not big enough to fight at 185. This looked like an old fat guy getting beat up by like Mr. Olympia. It was not. It was so bad. It looked like I can't, like, the worst mismatch in, like, I don't even, Randy Couture versus James Toney, like something like that. Like, the actual fight wasn't that bad, but when you look at the two guys, one looks homeless and one looks like this roided up supermodel.
It was like St. Pierre versus BJ Penn, only worse.
Much worse. Well, it used to be Borachini. He changed his name to Costa. I don't know if that's a marketing thing or what.
Borachini sounds like a nickname.
I don't know. I think he changed his name. But he was just bigger, stronger, faster, and was just beating on Hendricks, and they waved the fight off. Hendricks wasn't out or anything. He was just getting pounded on. You could hear those punches, like, thudding on TV. It was, like, that hard.
My impression was this was literally Big John saying, buddy, you've had enough. Like, this was Big John making a call on the fly of, this guy can't take more punishment. It's a general rule in his life.
Yeah, Hendricks is sad, man, because ever since that GSP fight, he hasn't been the same. He was, like, on that streak, wanted that fight so bad, got it. A lot of people thought he won it. Then it's just been, like, downhill ever since. And I don't know if it's the fight, the weight cuts, USADA, a combination of all three, but I think he needs to hang him up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I watched, I'm looking at this fight. And, like, there's a rule, and people know it, that you can't make accusations in the media. You always have to say allegedly for everything, because otherwise you get sued for libel. But one of the defenses for libel is the truth. So if I call you a pedophile, that's usually libelous. But if you actually are a pedophile, I win. So if you try to sue me for libel, I can just say, well, you are, and then I win. I use this all as a preface to say, Borachina uses performance-enhancing drugs. I would like to say steroids is a shorthand. I don't know if it's steroids or HGH or something from horse, the blood of young virgin boys from Argentina. I don't know what it is, but this man's physique is not natural. Johnny Hendricks, however, looks like he lives all day waiting to put on flip-flops and then go wakeboarding while he holds a beer on a man-made lake. On a jet boat.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Did you see anything in Costa's performance that made you say, hey, this guy's going to be something, or was he just beating up on a fat little guy past his prime?
He looked good enough, I guess. I don't know.
That's the best description of Hendricks ever.
Yeah, really.
A fat little guy past his prime.
I mean,
that man would murder me and my family with no problem.
Maybe.
If he wanted to.
He might fucking eat you. Fucking Jeffrey Dahmer's favorite fighter there. It just, you know, it's...
But, I mean, he's 11-0, Costa here, or Borachini, or whatever we're going to call him from here on out. He's 11-0, undefeated, 3-0 in the UFC. Was it a performance where you're like, wow, this guy's going to be something? Or it's like, oh, it's just a younger guy who's not very good beating up on the older guy who's worse?
I saw this as really just more reflective of where Hendricks is in his life than...
Right.
Anything else? I mean, normally it would be, oh, well, nice win, but Henderson looks, he looked so piss poor in there. It wasn't like, oh, you know, he got tired or, you know, even against, like, Tim Boach, there were some parts you're like, okay, you know, he looks okay. This one was just like, the whole time I was like, what the fuck's going on? It looks like he's got some sort of, like, I was going to say drug problem, but it's probably just beer.
Alcohol's a drug. In the prelims, James Thicke defeated Joseph Duffy by TKO at 4:59 in the second, right before the bell sounded.
Yeah, another one of those fights where it just kind of happened, and then all of a sudden, oh, there's a finish. And it was put so near the end of the bell. Like, so a lot of finishes right at the end of the bell, right at the end of the round, or knockdowns right at the end of the round. Good performance for Vic there. He really he did what he needed to do, and it asked for a decent fight afterwards, being like, come on, man, like, just come on. Somebody give me a fight.
Yeah, he's 7-1 in the UFC. Like, he's another one of those guys you don't realize until you pull up his record and look at it. 7-1 in the UFC, 12-1 overall. It's pretty freaking good.
Yeah, no, that's the...
That's world champion stuff 5 years ago, you know? It's crazy.
Who was the loss to?
I want to say
it was by submission.
Nope, it was knockout.
Oh.
UFC 199, Inglewood.
Oh, that was the Bisping show. Darren Elkins?
Benal Dariush.
That's kind of sad, actually.
It's weird. Like, how do you get knocked out by him? That's probably Dariush's only career knockout. Moving along. In a heavyweight fight, we had Mark Godbeard defeating Walt Harris by disqualification after an illegal head kick. This was hilarious. Like, Godbeard, I think, got poked in the eye, and the ref tried to, like, give him his time, and Harris just kept moving in and booted him right in the face, like, head kicked him. And the ref just waited. I think they just called it a DQ, and it was the end of the fight, right?
It was bizarre. Like, when I watched this, it's like, well, that's really fucking illegal there. Like, but it was so illegal that I'm like, they can't possibly... I didn't think they'd actually disqualify him for it, because I thought, it's so blatant that they must think obvious accident. But I guess they said not an obvious accident. I mean, frankly, that's fucking almost criminal battery. Referee says, don't hit him, don't hit him, and you kick him in the fucking head. That's pretty bad, man. Like, that's not like a punch. You know, punches kind of happen. You're lost in the moment there. Where, like, a kick takes some time. And you have a lot of time to pull back on a kick.
Yeah.
So he just said, fuck it. And kicked him right in the head. Like, when he kicked him in the head, I thought, my first thought was, the referee said to stop the fight.
Right.
Like, oh, must not have, I really thought, oh, must not have said it. No, he did.
Never seen that before. It was actually a nut shot, not a eye poke prior, but kick him in the nuts, then you kick him in the head and get DQ'd. Walt Harris.
My brother and I have talked about that for years. We always called it the Gracie Special, because there was a fight with Hoist, and he kept talking about, like, oh, yeah, it was when Hoist fought Hidehiko Yoshida, and before they fought, Hoist was like, I've been developing new techniques and all this, and, like, the first thing he did was kick him right in the cock. And so we always thought, this is brilliant. Just go out there, kick him right in the balls right away. And so we eventually came up with what I thought would be the perfect technique, is to practice kicking someone in the nuts and then hitting him in the face just after, so the referee would never actually catch the nut shot, because you'd knock the guy out cold. You could cheat your way to victory.
It's pretty good. He did that against Shamrock, didn't he? In that last fight in Bellator, didn't he punch Shamrock in the balls?
That's right. That's where we got the final idea from, because that's what he did with Ken. I remember when he did it, because we lost our fucking mind. I'm like, he did it. He did the Gracie technique. He did our trick. We couldn't believe it. It was awesome.
He's been refining it the last 20 years.
It's a damn technique.
And doing lots of steroids.
Most people don't see it coming.
I think we mentioned this earlier. OSP defeated Corey Anderson by head kick. Just knocked Anderson out cold. He went flopping backwards. OSP took this fight on short notice. I think Patrick Cummins was originally Corey Anderson's opponent. So OSP is on a little bit of a run. He's not my favorite fighter in the world, but he has now won three in a row at light heavyweight and is probably, you know, in the mix for somebody in the top five, you would think.
Yeah, I actually thought this was one of the best performances. I don't want to say best performances for OSP, a very good one in the sense that obviously got the flashy knockout, but even prior to that, he fought very, very calmly to the degree where I was like, wow, he's not worried at all about the offense of Corey Anderson. And it more or less was borne out that he was correct because he never got seriously challenged on the feet, and then he just fucking just murdered him.
Yeah. Another great finish on the show. Then we had Randy Brown defeating Mickey Gall, 29-28, 29-28, and 29-27. I did not see this fight. I saw some clips, but it didn't tape for me. Yeah.
It was what it was. Mickey Gall just, he couldn't wrestle him. And that's it. And what we saw was a guy in Gall whose jiu-jitsu was good enough that he wasn't going to get finished, but Brown couldn't pass the guard, but it wasn't so good that he could submit him, and Gall couldn't really stand, and so it was really, you don't see this very often in the UFC anymore. Most guys who can't submit you right away off their back or who are that dangerous off their back, usually they either get up or nobody lays in their guard. So to see this kind of prolonged guard work, especially at a lighter weight class, that's kind of odd.
Yeah, first loss of Gall's career. Hopefully, you know, he'll get back on the horse and be back. At one point, he was talking about going down to 55. Looking at his frame, I don't think that's a good idea, but I wouldn't be surprised if he tried it after losing this fight.
Yeah, it really did. It came across like, I hate saying it, but like it wasn't a UFC caliber fighters in there.
Yeah.
It was like very good fighters, but they just weren't refined enough, especially not refined enough for, you know, this high profile of fight.
Right.
Also, Sage Northcutt must really suck.
Oh, it's CM Punk. Randy Brown, we came off, I think, looking for a fight too. But he's had more fights in the UFC than Gall. He is now like 4-2 in the UFC. So there you go. Signature win for Randy Brown, if that means anything. On the fight pass portion, Curtis Blades defeated Alexei Oleinik by TKO. It was a doctor stoppage. This was a weird one, too. The ref originally believed Blades delivered an illegal kick to a downed opponent and called a doctor to check on Oleinik. The fight was stopped due to the doctor's advice. The replay, however, showed the strike did not deliver significant damage as it only grazed the ear of Oleinik. The fight was ruled a TKO win for Blades. Did that make sense to you?
No, because once again, it's like their intent to be like, look, guys, this is what we're going to call the New York special. We're going to have somebody throw an illegal strike to a downed opponent, okay? Everybody here? Yeah, okay. The referee's going to say, hold on, that looked illegal, so everybody's going to stop. The guy in the bottom who got kicked is not the one who quit. He didn't tap out, right, guys? We're all clear on this. He won't tap out. Referee will say, stop this for a second. A doctor will come in and say, hey, this fight should be stopped. The guy on the ground will be like, but I want to fight still. The doctor will be like, no, you got hit by a very damaging blow. Then the referee will look at the fucking videotape for some reason and just completely change his fucking mind on all of it. What the fuck is this? How do you lose by, I guess, TKO when you were hit by a phantom kick on the ground that the doctor said was real? What the fuck? The only thing I can think of is he was on the ground and the kick went at his head and he said, I can't continue now. Because he was trying to, you know, draw the DQ win.
Right.
But when the referee looked at it and saw, oh, you never got hit, therefore, you must have been submitting verbally from prior damage.
Right.
Which, I don't give these referees enough credit to be that smart. I think that they're just morons. That the fight got stopped and they're like, shit, I don't know what to do here.
Maybe this will get guys to stop doing that, acting like they got hit worse than they did. Remember that Josh Koscheck one? Remember that? Was he saying he got poked in the eye or something?
I loved Koscheck. I remember when he beat Diego. When he beat Diego, and Diego was undefeated prior to that, and the fight was so awful, and everybody knew it was awful. It was in Houston. They were booing and booing. I think that was the undercard of St. Pierre and Sarah. There was also Roger Huerta and Leonard Garcia on that show. That was a hell of a fight when they got the Sports Illustrated cover. Anyways, and then after Koscheck won, that may not be the same show now that I think about it. But yeah, after Koscheck won, he just goes 19-1. I was just like, you are the biggest dick, and it's not an act. This guy was his whole life, and it was so great, and now he's getting murdered in Bellator.
I liked when he, who was he fighting? Paul Daly, where he just like wrestled, humped him, fucked him, whatever, the whole fight. And he's talking to Daly, yelling in his ear. Daly was so pissed afterwards that he threw a punch at Koscheck after the bell.
Oh, yeah.
Got fired from the UFC forever.
Koscheck's good. Awesome.
He was good. He was good.
It's so weird to think about like Josh Koscheck as a fighter these days. Because, I mean, he was obviously a very good athlete, but because he was on that first season's Ultimate Fighter, and him and Lieben, and even Diego kind of, they all kind of came across as pro wrestling characters more than true elite athletes. Like, we see, today everybody in the UFC, they all come across as high-level athletes, or in SportsCenter and all this, whereas that era, it just seems so foreign from what that is now. It's almost like it's not the same sport.
It's matured, for sure. Ricardo Ramos defeated Ayman Zahabi by knockout spinning back elbow.
Yep.
Good finish. Fight of the night.
I was getting a hot dog when that happened. I do like hot dogs. I don't eat them anymore, really, because I'm eating healthy mostly. But I got two food vouchers from the UFC for $15 a pop.
So wow.
I got a hot dog and popcorn and some water.
How much is a hot dog at MSG? It's got to be $10 at least, right?
I know that I got two bottles of water, a hot dog, and a popcorn, and that was like the equivalent of like $28 or something. Just insane. I was just like, oh, thank goodness for this, because I would not have ordered all this otherwise. This is ridiculous.
Because you make it sound like you ordered so much good stuff. It's like the worst food you could possibly get.
It should cost $28.
I know. I'm just saying. Like, oh, this is so great. I have all this delicious food. No fight of the night. They gave $50,000 to GSP, Dillashaw, and Rose for performance of the night. And they gave out a split performance of the night of $25,000 to OSP and Ricardo Ramos.
This is so fucking sad.
Isn't that weird?
I know that it's a different era and all, but this is a company where Dana used to, and I'm sure he probably took, I hope he took care of people.
Yeah.
But I know that in some respects, this is more professional. Like, this is what actual sports do. Like, you don't see the commissioner of baseball just being like, you know what? Two fucking MVPs. We're going to have two in each league. We have four total.
We're going to do an immediate rematch of this game right now.
Exactly. It's like, everything is very important about these strict rules. But it's like, really, you nickel and dimed people. You did a $6 million gate in Madison Square fucking Garden, 1.2 million buys a pay-per-view, and you're like, well, fuck, I can't afford to give each guy 50 grand. 25 apiece it is. Like, shit, dude. Like, you probably made 50 grand, like, every 2 or 3 minutes on this. No, you probably made 50 grand a minute at least on this show.
One fight that did not happen and neither guy likely got paid was a light heavyweight fight with Ion Kutaleba and Michael Olazinchuk, because Kutaleba got flagged by USADA the day before the fight. Did you notice this?
I only noticed it when I was sitting in the arena and I was like looking over the card and like, this doesn't seem right. What the fuck's going on with this? We're missing a fight. Because I remember looking for a graphic to use for that fight. I'm like, where am I going to find an Ian or Ian Kutalabra picture? And I found some bullshit on the UFC website. But, yeah, I guess it didn't happen, which is honestly I'm all for. When I'm at live MMA, I always want fewer fights. These longer these cards are, I just get drained.
Yeah, I think he filled out something and wrote something down on a form that they didn't like. I'm not seeing a lot of information on what exactly happened there, but I'm pretty sure I saw that somewhere where he put some kind of supplement or something was taken down on the form and he got popped, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's because that was, I mean, I've never heard of a USADA flagging that late for drugs. Like,
oh,
was,
here we go. I got
that
it.
That seemed to be impossible.
Here's their statement. The UFC was notified today that USADA has informed ION. I was just thinking, does anybody ever call him Chupacabra? You know those things like that are supposed to be in Puerto Rico? That should be his nickname. Anyway, of a potential anti-doping violation stemming from its investigation into voluntary disclosures by Kutalaba during an out-of-competition sample collection on October 18th and 19th.
Huh.
So apparently on the 18th and the 19th, he voluntarily disclosed he was taking something he shouldn't have been. You would have thought after the first day he would have stopped doing that. But if he volunteered the information up, it's weird it took him 2 weeks to suspend him. But
yeah, that's...
Whatever.
I'm sure maybe he voluntarily said, I'm taking this supplement, and they're like, what the fuck is that? And then it took him like 2 weeks to be like, it's got what in it? And they had to go through and test it and be like, no, dude, you can't take this. It's got fucking steroids in it.
That could have happened.
Otherwise, this really fucking, like, I know that in theory you got to test totally all the time, but what the fuck are you doing pulling people for drug failures, so to speak, within 24 hours of fight? Like, that's just fucking impossible. That's stupid. Everybody involved is stupid.
Something else that sounded stupid. Dana White was making a lot of media rounds during, like, post shows and prior to the show to help promote UFC 217. And at one of the pressers, I think this was after the show was over, he was talking about how this show would do 1 million buys, and it's looking like they destroyed that number. He said that. But he also claimed that this was the best year in UFC history as far as business goes. And that raised a lot of eyebrows. I mean, we've been talking about it all year. This is a down year. The pay-per-view buys aren't there. They haven't done 1 million buy show all year. I think last year they had 5. With Conor, Ronda, UFC 200 with Brock, all those huge shows they did last year, they haven't had any million buy shows this year. So that was raised some eyebrows. Do you think it's possible, as far as profit goes, this could be their best year if you take into account, you know, Mayweather, McGregor, they got a cut of that. They laid off a bunch of people. They fired all these top-level executives that probably had pretty good salaries. And maybe the rights fee. I think the rights fee for Fox increased every year, so maybe they're getting another $15, $20 million this year as opposed to last year. But could they have made up all that pay-per-view revenue based on just those three things?
I mean, maybe things are – it's such a big company, perhaps all these outside deals. Maybe they have new TV deals around the world that we don't know about, all those escalators, blah, 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 blah. The truth is Dana's just saying shit. It's such a vague statement. It's our best year ever. What the fuck does that mean? Like,
right. Did
you sell your most tickets? Now, are you more popular than ever? No, but you kind of are. You know, you've been in New York more than ever and inflation or something. I don't know. It's Dana. Dana says, it's Trump. We're just used to these things by now. Just sometimes certain statements, you're just like, just let it go.
Well, sometimes I always have mixed feelings with Dana, because some people are like, he's a liar, he's always full of shit. But as far as promoters go, I've always felt he's been fairly honest. I feel in the last couple of years he's kind of veered off course a little bit. And I think a lot of that's because he's doing less press now. So when you do get him, I think he's just not as involved as he once was, and that comes up later too. But he said, somebody asked him about the pay-per-views being down, and he said, whose indications are that? People who don't know what the fuck they're talking about. If you don't know what's going on in our business, how can you speculate that we're having a bad year? This is the best year by a long shot in the company's history. Boom.
And again, I think some of this is just, it's just, it's Dana thing in his own way. Look, I know you guys are all guessing, and you maybe you're close, but fuck you. You're not running this company. I run this company. I know for real. I'm not just some moron getting weird fake pay-per-view numbers here and there or whatever. Like, he actually knows what they are. But he's still, it's just, it's Trumpian.
Yeah.
There are certain things with Dana that he will get defensive about. How, like, successful the business is money-wise and stuff. What the costs are. That stuff he's always seemed to be very, very testy about.
I just saw something hilarious. Walt Harris is appealing his GQ loss to Mark Godbeer. He claims, Godbeer cheated the fans and he cheated me. Walt Harris is the guy who booted him in the face. He's complaining that he lost that fight by DQ when he illegally kicked a defenseless man in the head.
You know the thing about, I'm pretty sure, I remember reading once with some states at least, those appeals, the fighters wanted to lodge an appeal, cost money to do that. I really hope he's going to spend a grand or whatever at least to just say, because he cheated the fans and he cheated me. As a rebuttal also, Your Honor, cheated himself.
More Dana White talk. He is apparently interested in getting into the boxing business. He's filed for a boxing promoter's license and says he's going to move forward and get into boxing. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think that WMEI sees pieces that they can sell around, and they're going, well, fuck me, maybe if we do boxing. Because I think there was an issue as far as how much they could get as a cut and stuff, like officially with Mayweather, because they weren't a promoter.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe this is their way of ensuring that in the future. And then, oh, now we're doing boxing, and if you guys want to box, you can box in the UFC ring or something.
Dana said, no, I'm not leaving the UFC. I'm getting into boxing with Ari, and the UFC will be doing boxing too. It's still early. We're still working on it. I've got to get my shit together, but I'm getting into boxing, man. It's coming.
Maybe they just figure, look, boxing promoters are really bad at their job. Maybe we can do that one too.
Yeah, I just hate when people get spread too thin. I feel like without Lorenzo, and we know how the UFC's been doing this year, not just based on business, but some of the booking and matchmaking and the shows are so goddamn long, all that stuff. It's just like, I'd rather stuff gets watered down and gets worse when people are spread thin. It's just how it is. And I hope that doesn't happen. Maybe Dana can do both.
Yeah, it's over. Like the glory days, they're done. Because you think about, like, Dana is there less and less, and Joe Rogan's there less and less. And I actually think that those two, the more they're missed, the more distant it becomes as a company. But it's just changing.
Yeah.
It's morphing from a Josh Koscheck company to a Daniel Cormier on commentary company.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You got to watch the Nama Yunus and Yan Jacek fight. He just after the finish, he just keeps yelling, Thug Rose, like literally 15 times. It was so obnoxious. It was like that was the jump the shark moment for me in Cormier. Before, I didn't mind him, but I'm like, this guy is bad at this.
He's fucking bad at his job. Like, and it's just like his fighting. He's trying. Like, you don't wanna not like the guy. Because he is kind of, like, he seems like he's nice, but it's just like, dude, you suck at this. You're making things unenjoyable for me. You're worsening this product. Thanks. Thanks, DC.
White, I think he was interviewed by TMZ for this, but they were talking about UFC 219 in the main event. Obviously, we already lost the Cruz-Rivera fight, but White is essentially saying that he wants Connor on that show. He wants to do Connor and Ferguson, but Connor's holding it up. and he's concerned that, quote, when you make friggin' $80 million, things change. You never know. I said that before the fight. You make that kind of money, it can change you. So he's talking like Connor's looking, you know, for some equity or to be a true partner in his fights, and it's holding up negotiations to get him back in the cage is how Dana's playing it in the media now.
I mean, say it's $80 million, which sounds really low. It's like, if it's $80 million, Connor's made a lot of money already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what he probably made in 2016, probably at least $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, nothing to sniff at, but 80 and 20, that's not like you're going from, you know, 50 grand to 80 million. Like, you're living on yachts either way. It's just how big is your yacht. So, I don't know. I think it's just kind of, it's very odd. I don't know how any of this stuff works. It just seems weird to me that Connor would fight on what I would consider short notice, just as far as a build would be concerned.
I mean,
He
might know.
He should be fighting.
Yeah. Sorry.
He should be fighting with like 2 months. No, sorry, he should be fighting with like, you know, 2 solid months of hype time without, you know, any major like holidays and shit. Like Floyd would. Or maybe these guys don't see themselves like Floyd in that sense. And Connor just wants to fight often like he did before, just getting paid more.
Yeah, I mean, he might be training too, who knows, and he's planning on fighting on that card, and he's going to bargain hard. They know there's no main event for that show. He's probably getting behind the eight ball, and they need something for the end of the year show. Like, they were talking about Cyborg at home, but it sounds like that fell apart, shockingly. So, and I don't really think that's the end of a year main event. I see that as the co-main under a Connor fight.
I know what it's going to be.
Okay.
It's going to be the Manny Nunez fight.
Who's she gonna fight?
I don't know, but she's gonna fight. It's gonna be her.
There's nobody for her to fight. Boring.
Doesn't matter. It's just she's the one that 2017 is the year of Amanda Nunez just dragging down pay per view.
Maybe you think Holm would take that fight?
Yeah.
That's what they should do.
There we go. That's just a turd just to drop right at the end of the year.
I mean, Holm's got a little bit of a name more than anybody else in the division. You know what's awesome? I'm looking at the bantamweight rankings for women on UFC.com. Number 5 ranked bantamweight is Ronda Rousey. It's awesome. She makes me laugh.
I think I have her like number 7. It's like one of those things. It's one of those deals when you look at it, it's like, well, I think she should maybe, I don't know, is she really below Kat still? Like, you know, there's really not very many women.
Right. I just don't see her fighting again anytime soon. That's why
neither do I.
Yeah,
but
it's like, if you're basically retired. She was doing some media this week for Xbox or something.
I have her at 8.
Okay.
Right. The only person, I only have 9 for the bantamweight women. And Kat Zingano's the only one below her.
Ugh.
I mean, Caitlin Vieira is above her. And honestly, I can't even really remember what Caitlin Vieira looks like fighting.
Yeah. Huh.
Look, at women's featherweight, I only have 1 person ranked. It's just Cyborg. Number 2 is LOL.
Whatever happened to Megan Anderson? Is that her name?
Yeah, she got, I don't know if she got injured or, I mean, she had to pull out of that, some sort of personal
No one, I don't feel like anybody's, that's one of those stories, like, people were talking about that fight, finally somebody's Cyborg size, I don't think anybody really gave Anderson a shot in it, but she pulled out of the fight, and I was like, she's vanished. No one knows, you don't hear anything about her, there's no buzz, there's no next fight, it's bizarre.
It's got to be either drugs or pregnant.
Could be. But you would have thought you'd see some pictures of her pregnant or something. But
well, maybe she doesn't want to talk about it.
I know.
Like, we just found out about Juliana Pena.
Right.
When they told us that's why she wouldn't fight, because she's pregnant.
Yeah.
In case we were wondering.
I was concerned. On set.
Actually, listen, Brother Brian and I were talking about trash talking for women. Yeah. We both agreed that the ultimate example of, like, psyching out your opponent would be, like, 6 weeks before your fight, if you're a woman, you just let the world know, I had an abortion just now, just so I'd be able to fight you. That's how much I want this.
How much I hate you.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine that? I hate you so much, I aborted a child just because I want to punch you. That would be a boss move.
So, someone who I don't think is pregnant is Paige VanZant. On Saturday night, she put on Twitter, my next fight is against the winner of the 125-pound division Ultimate Fighter. Don't blink. If you haven't been keeping up on your Ultimate Fighter episodes, this latest season features all, you know, flyweights, and the winner of this season becomes the flyweight champion, the inaugural champion, as they call it. And Paige is essentially claiming she's going to fight the winner, which would mean she's getting a title shot, which she clearly does not deserve at this point in her career. What was even stranger about this fight announcement was the next night Dana White was asked about it at one of those post-fight pressers, and he claimed he hadn't heard about it and that it's not currently in the works at all. So I don't know what the story is there, but it sounds like old 12-gauge jumped the gun.
Who knows? I feel like I say that all the time with these morons, but one hand is not talking to the other. She's a ditz.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody probably did tell her that, though. I would not be surprised at all if she, because it seems like such a weird thing for her to make up.
Yes.
But on the other hand, what the fuck? They're planning for her to fight the winner or somebody that fights in a couple of weeks. Like, although, you know, fuck it. I'd probably do the same thing if I was them.
Well, it's awesome because she was supposed to fight Jessica Eye and had to pull out because of the old pink eye and every other malady known to man. And now she gets a title fight coming off a loss against Michelle Watterson. And Watterson really fights at 105. And now Paige is going to get a title shot at 125 off of that. That could be the worst, like, next fight, like, championship fight ever. You lost to somebody who's going to fight, normally fights 20 pounds less than you. What the hell? In the first round by submission, no less. Holy shit.
I don't know. It's going to be really fucking tough for them to top that inaugural women's featherweight fight. I mean, that one's going to forever be just the worst fucking title fight I've ever seen.
That was silly. I agree. But Paige getting a title shot at 125 doesn't... I mean, it makes sense money-wise, I guess, and she'd probably be the biggest name at 125. Even so, it's like, at least get a win. Just give her somebody she can beat and come off a win, at least.
I looked at her Twitter feed the other day, or Instagram, one of those two, mm-hmm. and I'm just looking, I'm going, this is really fucking weird.
She makes me a little uncomfortable.
Like, it's just, she doesn't come across as a fighter at all.
Right.
She seems just like any other dumbass, just like she's, she looks like she's somebody that's on Dancing with the Stars. Right. She's in that C-level celebrity thing where you're just like, why is that chick famous? Was she in the Real World? I can't really remember. I think she made it to the semifinals of American Idol. Like, she could easily have been on American Idol and come out of that. If she was, her Facebook and Instagram, all that stuff, would look exactly the same as it does right now.
Right. On Friday, November 3rd, there was a Bellator show. It was number 186, Bader versus Vassell. The reason I mention this is there's a women's flyweight champion in Bellator now, too, and her name is Alima Leigh McFarlane. She won the title by submission, a triangle sort of armbar deal at 342 in the fifth. And we just talked about her last week, and I figured we should mention it. She's the one that beat up the soccer mom. So she's come from that win, and now she's the world champion in Bellator.
Yeah, I was watching it. I mean, look, I know why they pushed her, because I'm like, oh, she's a good-looking chick. Like, she's very, very attractive, and she fought okay. Yeah. Like, it was enough that when I was fast-forwarding through Bellator, I saw on screen, I'm like, oh, let me stop and look at that. Oh, look at her. Let me watch the fight for a few rounds.
Other fights, Bader defeated Linton Vassell by TKO. I don't remember how that finish came. I don't even know. I think Bader beat him up on the ground or something. Phil Davis won. Ed Ruth won by knockout. And actually, he landed a decent punch to get the knockout. And then Syed Awad defeated Zach Freeman by TKO at...
Oh, that Ed Ruth fight. Actually, I really wanted to talk about Ed Ruth. Because of everybody this weekend, he... next to Rose, I feel like he's the one that most stood out for me as far as, like, wow. Because, you know, this is a multiple-time NC2A champion. And if you hadn't told me that, I wouldn't have known. I was just like a regular... you know, modern-day fighter, because he could box, and he moved well, and he grounded in power. I saw the guy, because you're always looking at these guys with that kind of pedigree, and you think, okay, this is where the next champions are going to come from, and some of them adapt. You know, a lot of them these days seems like they're just not, they don't do real well, they don't become total fighters, they don't know how to embrace it. I saw that Ruth, I'm like, no, he's embraced it. I think he's going to be elite level fighter in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. He's got that wrestling background, man. I thought the other guy they signed looked better in the... I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but they've got a couple really good wrestlers. They went after those, you know, Aaron Pico and Ruth and a couple other guys. I can't think of his name. It's pissing me off. But, the thing about it, though, is once these guys' contracts are up, you know they're probably going to go to UFC. UFC will offer them big money. It's like Bellator's like a breeding ground for these guys, and then they're going to jump ship most likely. But, Ruth looked good, knockout win. And then in the opener, I was saying, just to make fun of Aaron Pico a little bit, but Syed Awad defeated Zach Freeman. Freeman's the guy who knocked out, and I think he choked out Pico, got destroyed by Awad, like this mid-level, you know, Bellator lightweight. Just got wrecked and knocked out and fell down and got up and fell down again. Just like an embarrassing loss for Freeman. I'm like, Jesus. Like, I watched that second Pico fight. I'm like, maybe Pico was a fluke and maybe A plus B doesn't equal C necessarily. But it made me rethink Pico again, because originally you think he's going to be great. He loses. Then he looks amazing in the second fight, and you're like, maybe he is going to be good. Now I'm thinking again, maybe he is not going to be anything. I don't know.
No, I think that first fight was just...
nerves or something?
It was like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, when you get finished the first 10 seconds of your first fight, I ain't holding shit against you on that. I'm like, I don't like to hold the guys' first fights against them anyways. Sure. Especially that... Seriously, I'm not going to try to judge the future of a guy's career based on the first 10 seconds of his career. Imagine looking at any other fighter in history and be like, let's look at the first 10 seconds of Matt Hughes' career. Huh, look at that. Probably not going to do anything. Look, he just walked around for 10 seconds. Boring.
Did you watch the first 10 seconds of Greg Hardy's MMA career?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that went down this weekend on Saturday night in Fort Pierce, Florida. He knocked out his opponent, Joe Hawkins, in 32 seconds. Hardy said, I had a lot of nerves, but it was good to get him out. It was good just to work through it and be in the ring. I was glad to compete and be back in a place where I can get it out and go at it.
Yeah, that guy was allowed to just hit people as much as he wanted with pads on for years. And you get the impression that this isn't somebody that just likes football so much as he just wanted to hit people.
And that...
like, that's scary.
That's essentially what happened. Like, he looked like an 0-0 fighter, just throwing wild, wide punches, that sort of thing, where he's very, 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 very raw, which you would assume in his first fight. I also noticed it must have been an amateur fight, too, because they were wearing fucking shin pads or whatever, which I always think is weird in MMA if the fight happen to go to the ground. I don't know how you grapple with shin pads, but whatever.
I totally lost my fucking train of thought. What are we
talking about? Greg Hardy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I know why I lost my train of thought now. Just because the other day I was watching football and I saw the Dolphins game, of all things, and they showed Ndamukong Suh. And for some reason, when I looked at him, here he is, all these giant men, and he's the giant of all the giants, and like, he's got these massive shoulder pads on, and his arms are just dying to get out. Like, they're just breaking free. They're so big, and he's just a monster. And the way that he plays football, I'm just like, this is like how Bears play football. They just run at you, and they just club you. And it's just like, what a fucking freak. Dude, I feel like men like that don't exist anywhere else in the world. Like, you don't see anyone in Europe that big. Like, there's some big, strong dudes, like, in Eastern Europe and all that, but they're all kind of shorter or stocky. This is like a 6'6" fucking animal. And, like, you know, there's nobody like that in China. And not, like, in South America. Like, the only place that has these just human bears. Anyways, good for you, Greg Hardy. Better than hitting a woman.
On the topic of human bears, John Jones is back in the news again. Because Joe Rogan, I would say. On the latest Joe Rogan Experience, I think he was talking to my least favorite person in the world, Brendan Schaub. He is so annoying. I cannot, like, every time he's on, I'm like, I can't even believe Joe Rogan has this guy on and likes them and they're friends. It makes me like Joe Rogan less, which...
Yeah, I am completely with you.
So douchey. It drives me up the wall. Like, every time it's like...
He looks like a douche. He talks like a douche. He has douche opinions.
If I hear him say, "We go in Sizzler," again, I just want to, like, tear my ears off the side of my head.
He's
got the shittiest catchphrases. He sucks.
And he's not smart. He doesn't know anything. Like, he doesn't know MMA. I am baffled by his success in life. I don't know why he has it. All I can think is, I don't know what to think. Rogan does have that meathead aspect to him. But
right place, right time, I guess. I don't know.
I guess. I know that Rogan and Brian Callen are super, super tight. And Callen, maybe because Callen's firing the kid with Schaub became such a big hit. And Rogan's like, well, this is my good buddy's meal ticket. I really hope it's probably not. It's probably just Rogan does like him for some reason. And look, people, if you're going to do drugs, be careful. You might end up with Brendan Schaub as a friend.
There's something else they were talking about. Oh, why they're friends? Did you listen to the fight campaign or post show, whatever you want to call it? They were talking about about UFC 217, and at one point, Brendan Schaub's talking about why they're friends. He's like, "I've never commented on a YouTube video, have you?" Rogan's like, "No." He's like, "That's why we're friends." Like. So stupid.
I even commented. Actually, I may have commented like once on something.
They're like,
and I felt kind of weird about
they're it. They're like, I've got shit to do. I'm an adult. He's like, me too. That's why we're friends. Like, fuck off.
You're sitting around for 3 hours smoking weed and drinking beer, watching fights and talking to each other. Let's not act like you guys were really above YouTube comments.
Anyway, we digress. Rogan was talking about Jones, and this is verbatim. "You want to know the craziest fucking rumor that I heard? I can't tell you who told me this. This is the craziest one. Stuff that
Eddie Bravo.
John Jones tested positive for takes a long time to get out of your system, right? You know where else you find that stuff? You find it in creatine. When they get creatine, sometimes from China, it's tainted with steroids. They use that creatine to cut cocaine. One of the things they cut some cocaine with is creatine because it looks like cocaine. So if he was partying, John, you want to do a bump? It's really good stuff. Hey, man, I can't test positive for anything. It's just coke, bro. It's not even cut. He had a birthday about 10 days out from the fight."
It fit.
I know, but it's so... Anything can fit. Like, that's the perfect John Jones dick pill excuse. Like, everybody knows I'm a cokehead. We can just say it was in the coke.
And once again, he goes to Asia for his excuse.
It's unbelievable.
Why is it that John Jones keeps ingesting products that come from Asia? Just stay away from that continent. Why does anyone ingest anything that comes from Asia?
He doesn't know that. He doesn't know that this coke is cut with creatine that came from Asia that had steroids in it. He just did some coke, not knowing. Like, that's going to be the excuse. And, like, the thing with Rogan and John Jones is, like, Rogan acts like he believes these excuses, which, like, infuriates me. It's like, Rogan isn't stupid, and it's just like he plays it up like, oh, he's a party animal. That's probably what happened. When I think deep down,
I think Rogan
knows what's going on.
I think so. I think Rogan wants to believe in these crazy things,
like UFOs or something. I want to believe.
He thought the moon landing was fake for years. Like he likes that shit. I also think he smoked a lot of weed. Mm-hmm. Like that's absolutely something. You're sitting around, you're high. You're like, dude, I hear the fucking craziest shit. John Jones gets Asian cocaine cut with Asian creatine, which is spiked with Asian andro. And think about that. Think of how many things have to be spiked. It's not just that the cocaine has creatine, but the creatine has something in it. It's just to spike the thing that you're spiking something with. Like, what the fuck? That's a lot of fucking... This isn't 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. It's getting steroids into your system. Through your nose? Really? Like, I'm not really sure how much it matters how you get it into your... Man, maybe it's fine. I don't know. But, I've never really actually understood that type of excuse anyways. Like, the whole tainted supplement thing, it never makes any sense. Like, steroids are expensive.
I think the idea is, like, the first couple batches of stuff, when it first hits the market, they want to have these impressive gains and people talk about it, and then afterwards they pull that stuff from it once the product starts selling well, because people think it works.
I've heard that too, but come on. If we've heard that, somebody in the FDA presumably would have heard about that.
I don't.
Or the FBI. Yeah. Or anybody. Like, and, like, seriously, first of all, steroids, again, they're expensive, and you'd literally be drugging people against their will. Like, what the fuck? This is a math. That's the kind of crazy conspiracy shit that, like, that to me that's way crazier than crazy dick pills. Like, I actually kind of understand these morons and their dick pills. I think they're all made by Armenians in the back of gas stations.
Do you think a lot of that GNC stuff is even regulated, though?
No, none of it is.
So it's not an FDA thing. I don't know why.
But it would still be illegal. Because it would still be illegal.
I get it, but nobody's checking it. So.
But again, if we've heard about it, you would think somebody at the FBI would be like, look, they're fucking looking at baseball players.
Well, I'm surprised just with, you know, government wants to regulate everything that they haven't looked into it. It's like something humans are ingesting, and there's nobody really knows what the hell's in any of it except what they put on the label. Like, that seems like
They've spent a lot of money on that since the 90s. What? Like, I know that that industry lobbies hard not to be regulated. Which, is why if you buy fucking stuff from GNC...
It's weird, though, because you think we... I shouldn't say we all agree, but most normal people agree that, like, the USDA is a good thing. We want to know that our chicken's safe and our hamburger's safe and the stuff we're putting into our bodies is what it's supposed to be, and we're not getting Mexican meat and Chinese meat where we're testing positive for steroids. It is what it's supposed to be. And it's weird that over the years that just hasn't happened with the supplement industry.
To which I counter that the supplement industry is a great example of how capitalism doesn't always result in people being hurt, because you and I, like normal people, we all go, I'm not going to fucking take supplements from GNC. I know this shit's full. I know it's not, it's a risk. Like, we know that's risk, so we don't go there. Because it's untrustworthy. We want stuff that we trust. The same reason, you know, when I get a hot dog, I'm going to 7-Eleven, not the guy in the street. I trust the 7-Eleven hot dog.
You're such a hot dog connoisseur.
My brother is,
so
too.
So what do you think the chances are that is what happened, or Jones will use that as an excuse with USADA?
I don't think he can. Like, I guess in theory he could, because it wouldn't technically be in violation of USADA. But it doesn't matter, because you can't prove it. He couldn't. What's he going to do, give them his coke? And then do a chain of custody on the illegally purchased cocaine? Like, what the fuck is that? He's going to call up his coke dealer and be like, hey, Jorge, where'd you get this coke? Actually, I guess it's China. Also, since when the fucking cocaine come from Asia? Cocaine comes from
They're not saying the cocaine came from Asia. They're saying they'll cut cocaine wherever it's from with creatine. And possibly the creatine they used to cut this coke had the turinabol in it.
What if the good old days of just cutting it with rat poison or something? You know, that everybody thought that worked well.
You get better high, too.
Yeah.
Did you see this Legacy Fighting Alliance fighter CJ Hancock, like, died in the cage? His heart stopped, and he suffered kidney failure in the middle of a fight. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Actually, I did hear about it. I didn't hear anything else about it. I saw a headline. I was trying to come up with a joke just then, but I could not think of anything.
He wrote...
I got it. Was Steve Mazzagatti the referee?
I don't have that information in front of me. But this guy...
I kept wanting to see Mario Yamazaki. What did we have in Mazzagatti?
I think I see him every once in a while on, like...
Indian shoes?
No. What the hell? PFL. I think he was on that PFL show where... their last show wasn't even televised. It was just online. It was something in D.C. But I feel like I saw him on that for some reason. And I don't know why I was watching that, because I'm a freak. But anyway, this guy, CJ Hancock, I don't think he's related to John Hancock in any way, wrote, "Well, I died tonight in the cage. ... I'm okay."
Dramatic pause.
But this is how he starts. "Well, I died tonight in the cage. ... I'm okay." Like, you're not okay. You died tonight, but let's move along.
That's such a good opening line. I like that. Like, "I died tonight in the cage. I'm going to keep
going. But I'm okay."
I'm okay. All right. Well, I guess that's the end of that story.
He wrote, "Thanks, everyone. I'll reply when I can. My heart stopped and I had kidney failure. They did CPR and hit me with the defibrillator twice and brought me back. Still unsure why it happened. I had a hard weight cut. Doc says I shouldn't fight again. I'm broken. I guess I'll just be a coach from now on. I still plan on competing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and BJJ super fights when I get better. Thanks to everyone that supported me." Later, in another Facebook post, he said he was given 8 bags of saline to get back to 206 pounds, and the incident occurred due to severe dehydration. Fight took place at 170 pounds.
I wonder why your heart and kidneys stopped.
He cut 36 pounds and needed 8 bags of saline? That's a lot of fluid to put into your veins and get...
Yeah, I mean, shit. I've seen guys that... I mean, usually when I hear about guys like, "Oh, I have 206 pounds after my weight in and all this," like, I always think a lot of that's kind of bullshit. Or it's like a couple days later when your body, after a hard weight cut, will just pack on weight real quick. But if you're putting that much saline in you, like, dude.
Sounds like it would puff up like a tick, you know?
Yeah, I just, he's a lot, whatever, he's a moron. He's going to die. I know I'm getting older, though, because, like, as he's talking about, like, the whole thing, I'm like, he's like, I'm picturing some 20-year-old kid who dies twice in the middle of a cage fight, and afterwards he's like, "Oh, I guess I'm just going to coach now." I'm sitting thinking, like, I think you should just stop. Just get a different job.
What it's worth.
Like, you died.
Yeah, Hancock was 2-2, and he's 32 years old. He's also a coach at King's MMA in Houston. Wonder if he's friends with old Derek Lewis, who's been doing well on Instagram again since he had to pull out of that fight. He stayed off Instagram for a few days. It was a bit rough for me, but he's back, and he's come on strong.
That's good. I was worried.
And me too. My God.
I'd heard the rumor.
Like, it was literally like 3 or 4 days, no Instagram posts after he pulled out of that Verdum fight. He was either depressed laying low, but he's back.
I can't get into Instagram yet. I finally got Twitter figured out. Like, in the sense, like, I went through a couple weeks ago and I called it, and now it's enjoyable. I'm like, oh, I kind of understand why people like this.
Although now that, have you seen the 280...
Oh, yes, I have. I'm one of them.
I don't like it. Because I'm skipping stuff now. Like, if it's a full paragraph, I'm like, I'm moving on. moving on. I don't have the time to read all your thoughts. I need them concise and to the point and get out of there.
My life is so busy that I don't have literally another half a second.
Yeah, I don't. Let's move along. Ed Suarez, the CFO of LFA, issued a statement about the incident. He wrote, "It's a very unfortunate situation where CJ Hancock took a body kick during his fight. After the kick landed, there was a few second delay, and then he collapsed in the cage. Our cut man immediately recognized the problem and signaled to the medical team sitting cage side. They were able to resuscitate and stabilize CJ and took him to the hospital via ambulance, where they determined he had suffered kidney failure. CJ is currently recovering and in the company of his friends and family." In a way, it sounds like he got kind of lucky. They had the right medical personnel there, and it seemed like it was organized, and they got him to the hospital, which was good. But, I mean, if this happened on, like, at the next tier down, a lesser show, he might not have made it. And, I mean, it's another one of those examples where I don't know what you do for weight cutting, if you do same day, or something's got to change there, because eventually something worse is going to happen. It already has.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's the nature of the beast. Every once in a while, this shit's going to pop up. Local little shows, and I don't know, it's just the odds. You get enough monkeys with typewriters and all that.
So, I know we were going to talk Darren Till, Stephen Thompson. I'm trying to read here. This is on MMA Fighting. It looks like the most recent story is that Stephen Thompson's coach is saying there's no interest in fighting Darren Till at this time. To me, that's an awesome fight. I want that fight to happen. I think they should make it happen. I'd like to see somebody get in Stephen Thompson's face and go after him and throw punches at him and see what happens, see if he can counter. Because most guys are so tentative and scared to strike with him that they don't end up doing much, and it ends up being a dull fight. But I don't see Till employing that game plan at all.
Yeah, it's a good. I think it's a perfect fight for everybody involved except for Nazi Dad.
So Nazi Dad Ray Thompson says, "We've talked to no one about fighting Till. Not sure how this is a done deal. As for Till, he needs to fight through the murderer's row at welterweight like Wonder Boy did to get to the top. We want to fight forward. We've been calling out Lawler since before the first Woodley fight and have gotten crickets on it. Why? Why hasn't anyone talked to us about it? No one from the UFC, no one from Lawler's camp, no one. Wonderboy had one of the most fantastic, exciting fights when he fought Woodley at 205. That fight stole the show. The second fight was a snooze fest, mostly because Wonderboy chased Woodley around the octagon for 5 rounds. We take part of the blame since we didn't pull the trigger often enough. Since then, we feel like we are being moved out of title contention. Not saying that's the case, but it sure looks that way. What happened to the rankings?
You suck. you fought for the title 2 times in a row and you lost. Like, shut up. Like, just go out there and fight some people and look. I know that you want. Look, what you've been calling out Lawler. Great, he's got an opponent. What's next up, dickhead? You don't get to have just one, unless you've beaten everybody there's to beat. You don't get just one guy ahead of you. You just lost. You're 1-1-1 in your last 3 fights. Let's not. Let's just back off a little bit here.
Yeah, but I think that's a fun fight though. I would be okay with that fight.
Yeah, I love it. If I think it's the perfect fight for everybody involved, except for Wonder Boy's dad. But that's all right. There's a reason that Hitler lost. He's in that good strategy. Got a little too full of himself.
Welterweight's so awesome. I think we've talked about it, but that division is so fun right now with older guys, younger guys moving up. It's just a stacked division. There's so many good fights they could make between you've got Covington still around, you've got that RDA and Robbie Lawler fight coming up. Masvidal's still there. I mean, obviously he's fallen, but Condit, Till, Cerrone, Ponzinibbio, Magny, Kamaru Usman, Gunnar Nelson. Like, that division's awesome.
Although, you know what's sad is that I look at all those people and they're all really great, and yet if George St. Pierre fought any of them, I would just be like, well, he's going to kill him. He's that fucking good.
I don't know. I don't know how he would do against a quicker. Again, if we're judging him on Michael Bisping, who got the shit kicked out of him by 46-year-old Dan Henderson, you know?
Yeah, it's still a bigger dude, and I mean, St. Pierre's.
I agree. I just don't know how good Bisping is. He's, what, 38? I don't know. Anyway, that fight looks like it's not a done deal. Till and Thompson is not a done deal. There was another fight cancellation, too. Frankie Edgar is out of UFC 218 versus Max Holloway.
Yeah, I just saw that myself, reported on it myself. Okay. And that sucks.
Something with, they said it's a facial injury? The hell does that mean? Like an orbital or something?
He posted something like, I should be back to full sparring in 6 weeks, according to the doctor. So my guess, if his facial maybe a cut.
Okay.
That's something true. Like a bad cut. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I see him. Is it the picture of him with all this food?
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Weird.
It's like fried fish.
I don't know. Yeah. First of all, it's disgusting because he's got a big old fucking fish
you
in the foreground.
You are such a pussy when it comes to food, but go on.
It's also weird. Like, that's an odd photo to be like, hey, everybody, not going to be able to fight. Hey, watch me eat everything I can.
Well,
like, that's like your, hey, I just made weight photo. Or I'm taunting Anthony Johnson photo.
Maybe he's with Anthony Johnson. Maybe, like, Anthony Johnson. Anthony Johnson and Johnny Hendricks took the picture. They're on the other side of the table. We just can't see them.
As soon as they walked in the door, Edgar's like, fuck me, I'm not going to be able to fight in 6 weeks.
I'll have one of everything. They order food like Ric Flair orders drinks at the bar. 137 kamikazes, please. What the hell? Who brought this guy? Can you imagine walking into a bar with Jim Ross and looking around? It's like this bumfuck bar. There's 10 people in it. And you just go to the bartender, I'll have 137 kamikazes. Be like, huh, oh, it's going to be that kind of night, huh?
You know, it's got to be. I know that deep down there's some part of Ric Flair's life that's really sad. And, you know, he's acting out of a bad place. And there's been a lot of bad times also with all the divorces and children dying and things like that. But that dude has really lived every minute of his life.
Sounds like it.
Like, my word, yeah. His Tuesday is everyone else's bachelor party. It's just nuts.
Every night at the bachelor party. That would be a good way to describe his life, yeah.
Yeah, and he absolutely is the guy that just walks in and be like, line them up, 137 kamikazes. And you can just imagine, like, the one drunk at the end of the bar lifts his head up, the bartender just kind of cleaning out the dusty glass out of routine, and he looks at Ric Flair and be like, what the fuck? And, like, then you, like, flash forward. 2 hours from now, there's chicks taking their tops off and dancing in the bar, and I'm just like, what the fuck just happened? Like, Ric Flair showed up. It's like one of those, those Budweiser commercials where, like, hey, you brought the party with them, ha, 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 and then Spuds McKenzie walks
it's
in.
It's the opposite of, when you walk into the bar and everybody turns and looks at you and, like, the record skips a beat and screeches. It's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Instead of going silent, it goes crazy. So, with Edgar out, Holloway still wants to fight on the card. He's promising the fans of Detroit he will fight on this show. Who's going to step up and fight him?
Everybody says that they want to.
Do they? Are people coming out of the woodwork saying they want
to? Jose Aldo said he wants
really?
It. Lamas says he wants it. Cub Swanson said he wants it.
Oh, Aldo's scheduled to fight Lamas anyway, so he's probably already training, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't hear
it would be...
Jose Aldo taking short notice fights very often, so... That makes sense.
He's got no championship now, though. I don't know. Jose Aldo would be the biggest name they could do as far as, like, an impressive main event. Personally, I want to see Cub Swanson just because it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would go with, Cub Swanson. He can be pulled out of his fight in Sacramento. Like, that's a good thing. They got a lot of good featherweights fighting this month or next month. So they should be able to find someone, and if not, Uriah Faber.
Yeah, the show's on December 2nd, so you'd have, you know, 4 weeks, roughly. You'd have to skip Thanksgiving dinner. You'd have to skip that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question they can get somebody. There's time. It's just a matter of getting a big enough name for that show. Because it was the main event. The Edgar fight was the main event of UFC, what would we be, 218. That show also has Overeem versus Ngannou, Cejudo versus Sergio Pettis, Eddie Alvarez versus Justin Gaethje, and Tisha Torres versus card. Michelle Watterson. So it's a good main card, but there's not a lot of draws on that. This isn't a million buy show.
No, but that it's a good action show, and I think it still will be. And we will have to wait and see, I suppose, though. I mean, it is Detroit, so they're used to things that once were great kind of falling apart and not being as good as they could have been. Perfect place for the UFC.
Conor McGregor should fight Max Holloway. Short notice.
Regain
the featherweight title.
How much of a baller move would that be if Conor's like, fuck that, I'm fighting Detroit, I'm going to knock him out, and he did it? We'd be like, what the fuck? This is guy's fighting. He's Donald Cerrone, but he's gambling with $100 million.
Yeah, that's what I want to happen. That was my immediate thought. Do the rematch. Even if he loses or he doesn't make weight, it's like, who gives a shit? The fact that he even did it and tried is epic, you know? I don't think they don't care about Thanksgiving in Ireland. It'll be fine.
No, they only care about the troubles and ending them. That's their version of Thanksgiving. Which I think, what day was the Peace Accord? I know 1919, Sunday Bloody Sunday, the Cranberry Song, some guy's in newspapers or something. Then they had the Peace Accords. We'll say, I don't know, what's a good day for Ireland? September 20th. I'm going to guess that's the day of the Irish Peace Accords.
Okay. While we're on the topic of history, what is that? 8 years ago this week, November 7th, what happened?
Hold on.
In MMA.
I figured in MMA, I got to look up the Irish Peace Accord. I'm really curious. If I nail this, it's going to be the biggest moment of my life. I know there's a Good Friday agreement here they list. Oh, that's what I was thinking of. April 10th, 1998. Oh. Effective December 2nd, 1999. I was not even close on either one of them. Let's see. 8 years ago today, November of... What's 8 years ago?
2009.
2009. November of 2009. All right, Mike, what were you doing in November of 2009? Randy Couture fought Brandon Vera.
No,
that was early. That was an English show, and yeah, that's my guess. Brandon Vera, Randy Couture.
You might have been at this show. You should have been.
2009.
Yep.
November. Is this Fyodor and Henderson?
Close. You got one half.
Fyodor and Brett.
Yeah.
Did
you go to that show? Is it in Illinois?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, that's the one where they made that gif where Roger's head explodes. You know the one where Fyodor knocks him out and then his head blows up and all the blood goes all over the screen? It's like a classic.
Oh, yeah, I use it all the time. I love that one.
Oh, all right. I didn't know. Yeah, so there was a Strikeforce show. That was like the last big win for... I shouldn't even call it a big win, but that was before the Verdum fight, and he went on that streak of losing to a lot of smaller, lesser guys.
Was that like the last time Fyodor ever won outside of Russia?
I will get that for you right now. Do you count the Japan fights?
Oh, no, I was just saying, all right. Yeah, that's part of Russia for our purposes. It's close.
Geography buffs. He has not won a fight in America since then.
I really did see history.
And he probably will not ever again either when you're getting knocked out by Matt Mitrione in a minute. What happened to Matt Mitrione? He hasn't fought again. That shit was 6 months ago. What the hell's going on with Mitrione?
Dude, what's happened with anything in Bellator?
I don't know.
That promotion is so
dead.
I want
them to do a heavyweight tournament just because I think it'll be hilarious. Because it's like all these old Fox, like, you know, Mitrione and Roy Nelson and Bobby Lashley. It'd be funny to see that. Or like Javi Ayala, just like fat guys fighting. It's good.
Tim Sylvia.
We'll bring back like Pedro Hizo or something. It'll be great. Looking forward to it. Fedor, put Fedor in it. Rampage could fight at heavyweight. Be good.
They probably should.
Ishii, all those old fuckers. Be good.
They might as well. It'd be something interesting.
I'd watch it.
Ooh, maybe I'll see Gegard Mousasi fight again. Ooh.
I saw somebody call him Gegard. Like, they spelled it G-A-Y-G-U-A-R-D. I'm like, that's okay.
That's so stupid.
I'm like, but that's my kind of, like, wordplay because it's so dumb and basic, but I like that sort of thing.
Oh, I never heard that
I don't
before.
Know how I didn't come up with it either. Like, that's right in my wheelhouse.
It's so odd. Like, the first time I saw his name, I should have been like, oh, Gegard.
Anyway, this weekend we've got Bellator 187. Dr. Dre song, 187 on the Undercover Cop. I doubt they'll use that as theme music. This one is in Dublin, Ireland at 3 Arena. In the main event of this show in Dublin, Ireland, we have AJ McKee versus Brian Moore.
Who the fuck is Brian Moore?
I don't know. I mean, most people would say that about
AJ McKee. I think he's like... Is he from Scotland?
Maybe. I can't even click. There's no Wikipedia link for him. The only person on this whole fight card with a Wikipedia page is AJ McKee.
I mean, this again, it's just Bellator again.
I think they had James Gallagher was supposed to be the main event, but he got hurt or something and had to pull out of the fight. So now they've got AJ McKee main eventing a show in Dublin.
Well, his last name is McKee, so that's kind of Irish.
The semi-main event is Sinead Kavanaugh versus Maria Casanova.
It's kind of weird for a woman to have a last name of Casanova. Isn't that kind of like implying, like, yeah, your mom got nailed? Maybe. Like, she got tricked for real.
In the opener, we've got Baby Slice versus Fred Freeman.
Like, the idea that you have Kimbo's Slice's kid, and you're like, yeah, I'm fighting fucking
Ireland. Should be fighting in Miami or some shit.
Or Compton.
Maybe.
That's what Bellator should market itself as. The urban MMA. They just go to, like, the dangerous part. Like, shows in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Compton.
So, yeah.
Gary, Indiana.
So, I take it you're not that excited for this Bellator show.
No.
I'll watch it. Because there's nothing else on Friday night.
There really isn't.
Or maybe I'll we'll do some Stranger Things or something. Anyway, then on Saturday, November 11th, we've actually got a good UFC fight night. Do we have the current number?
I think this is 120.
Yeah, is it on the board?
Nah,
fuck. Yeah, it is 120. Good job.
I was really proud of myself for remembering that.
Yeah, I was hoping the whole time, the whole last hour and 40 minutes we've been doing this, I would remember that joke. I couldn't remember the guy's name. Was it John? I don't know.
No, he's gone now. We brought in Jorge.
Did John have the harassment charge?
It's just a matter of cost. Jorge's willing to do it cheaper.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to take advantage of it.
I understand. It's a buyer's market.
Yep.
And
I bought it.
This one is in Norfolk, Virginia at the Ted Constant Convocation Center.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's a mouthful, huh? In the main event.
It's going to be like on a college campus or something, isn't it?
There's a link. Center? I'll click on it. It's a 219,330 square foot multi-purpose arena in Norfolk, Virginia, on the Old Dominion University campus.
Ah, nailed it.
It can seat 9,500 for concerts. I don't think there'll be that many people at this show. In the main event, we've got Dustin Poirier versus Anthony Pettis at lightweight. Two really good lightweights. And the question that,
with entertaining styles that clash.
The question is what Pettis is going to show up. He's been so erratic. You kind of know what you're going to get with Poirier. He's a great fighter. He just never can beat that top guy to move to the next level. He kind of got screwed in his last fight with Eddie Alvarez and probably should have had a rematch there, but they put Alvarez with Gaethje. So Poirier is always in the mix, whether it's featherweight or lightweight. He's always a top five-ish guy on his good days and, you know, top 10 on his bad days. But my question is, where's Pettis' head at? Does he still have it? And he's only 30, but he fights and has looked a lot older than that the last couple of years. He's coming off a decision win over Jim Miller, which clearly doesn't mean that much based on Jim Miller's most recent performance last week. And then he's got, you know, the RDA loss, Eddie Alvarez loss, Edson Barboza loss, and the Max Holloway loss. So big fight for Pettis to see if he's still relevant, and an opportunity, obviously, for Poirier to get in the mix for a possible title shot at lightweight.
Yeah, I think that Poirier, I think he's going to walk through Pettis.
You do.
I really just get the sense that Pettis is done.
Yeah.
He's not there, and what he had once, he's always going to be a super high technical kind of athletic fighter, and he's too old, too injured for that. Poirier is just a tough dude. I think the fight, it will be good. I feel very confident in that, because they're both those guys that have offensive games and they can't wrestle, so it should be a good fight.
I mean, Poirier is 8-2 in his last 10. His two losses, Conor McGregor and Michael Johnson. He's good. I think people sleep on him. He's really, really good.
Yeah, because he got embarrassed in one of the great Conor McGregor moments.
McGregor does that to everybody, though.
As time goes on, I predict these things. It's like, oh, I remember Conor with that stage of his career. That was when he was just a kind of a star.
Yep. In the semi-main event, we've got Matt Brown versus Diego Sanchez. Brown has claimed that this is his retirement fight. Diego Sanchez is moving up to 170 again, which is bizarre and probably not the right move for him. It was only, I want to say, how long ago? It was 2 years ago he was fighting at 145 against Ricardo Lamas, and now he's up at 170. To me, it kind of sounds like Diego just doesn't give a shit anymore and is looking for a payday. It's Matt Brown's retirement. He's older. Two guys who historically have had wars, crazy brawls, some of the best fights you'll ever see, but they're both just a little older and a little more banged up than they used to be, so I'm not expecting much here. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if either guy got knocked out early. But maybe they can rekindle some of that old magic they used to have years ago.
Yeah, it should be, again, it's two guys whose styles, and not just their physical styles and their technical styles, but their mental approach to fighting, it matches up well to have a good fight. And both guys, more than just wanting to fight, they also understand, I think that they kind of look at the job as being like, nope, I got to go out there and these people want to see me just throw down and do something stupid. I'm going to do it. It's kind of they're like the jackass of MMA fighters in that respect. I don't know if it'll be all that good just because I think it might end up being more sad than anything. But, yeah, let's just be optimistic while we still can.
I see Matt Brown kind of just walking through him because Brown's going to be bigger and stronger. But Diego surprises you sometimes. But
I think that Diego wins by body shot just because Matt Brown can – nobody in MMA has a greater weakness than Matt Brown to the body.
You're picking Diego.
Just to the body, simply because Matt Brown always gets hurt to the leg.
I think Diego's going to get destroyed, but
we'll see what happens. It's not like I agree.
Size difference. Diego's always been solid at 170. It was never the right division for him. And that was a big welterweight.
Yeah, but don't get rusty. It's like the wrestlers. They have the problems with the size. And Diego can wrestle.
Diego's not going to take him down, do you think?
Nah. It's going to be a suspense match, yeah. The more I think about it, like, yeah, nah, that's a bigger dude there. Still, that body shot, I want to be able to call someone a superstar.
I gotcha. I gotcha. And then when the results come in, we won't mention that you made that prediction. We'll only bring it up if that's what happens. Okay,
yeah.
Just making sure.
I don't know how you do things in life, but yeah.
Somebody who shouldn't be doing cage fighting anymore is Andre Arlovski. He's fighting Junior Albini in a heavyweight fight. Albini's the Brazilian guy whose kids were playing with shampoo bottles before he got into the UFC because the kids couldn't afford toys. He couldn't afford to buy them toys. Then he got like a performance of the night bonus when he beat Timothy Johnson by TKO at UFC on Fox, Weidman vs. Gastelum, back in July.
Yeah, Albini probably will win because, I mean, Arlovski, somebody's going to go to sleep in the Arlovski fight. Usually it's him.
Holy Christ.
Good but yeah.
I'm looking at Arlovski might be the streakiest fighter in the history of
like
MMA.
Running 8 in his last nine or something.
He starts his career 15-5, okay? Then he loses 4 in a row, and this is back in 09. We're talking 8 years ago. KO to Fedor, KO to Brett Rogers, loses to Bigfoot, gets knocked out by Khachanov, okay? Then he goes on a streak where he wins 5 in a row. Well, one was a no contest with Tim Sylvia, but he wins essentially 5 in a row, loses one to Rumble Johnson, gets back into the UFC and wins 6 in a row, beats Brendan Schaub, Bigfoot, Travis Brown, Frank Mir. Now he's on a 5-fight losing streak. Like,
yeah.
Holy shit. Just like the loss, 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 win, 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 win. It's crazy. I've never seen a streak like that. Overall, he's 25-15, but he lost by TKO to Stipe, TKO to Overeem, rear naked choke to Josh Barnett, TKO to Francis Ngannou, and unanimous decision loss to Marcin Tybura. So this is a bad streak for him, and if he can't beat Junior Albini, he needs to walk away.
I bet he can't remember his fucking social security number.
Do Russians have those?
He lives in America.
No, it was a joke.
Mine was a concussion joke.
Both not sensitive. Another person with a lot of concussions is Nate Marquardt.
Speaking of Russians.
Yes.
Just randomly, I don't know what I was, how I came upon this, and now I can't think of her fucking name. All of a sudden, she's married to Nicolas Sarkozy, the former French president. She was a supermodel in the 90s. And Carla Bruni.
Okay.
And I'm reading, again, she's married, and she was, when Nicolas Sarkozy was president of France, she was married to him. She was the first lady of France. And then during the 90s, she banged Mick Jagger and Donald Trump.
At the same time?
Well, not in the same room, but, like, in the same, like, year.
Okay.
And, like, she was, like, this was when Trump was divorcing Marlon Maples. And Trump is, like, on the record, being like, yeah, she called all the time. She just wouldn't leave me alone after a while. It was really kind of unattractive. Which is exactly when I read that. I'm like, that's how Trump talks. I love the idea that Donald Trump and Mick Jagger boned the First Lady of France.
That is bizarre. Small world.
Like, what a weird world that our president occupied. Like, that's the kind of weird era. Like, that's the scene he was in the 90s. He was in the same scene as women that banged Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I don't think Michelle was ever like, oh, maybe she's going to bang the singer from Coldplay, Chris Martin. I don't think that was ever an option.
Could be.
Maybe Weinstein, but.
Did you, speaking of weird Russians, did you watch that Icarus documentary?
I started watching it on Friday when I was in my hostel in New York. And
living it up.
Dude, look, to answer the question, I got like halfway through and I think I fell asleep.
Yes.
But that hostel, I mean, I've stayed in some derelict locations in my life. I've slept in like airports and shit. this was pretty bad. Like, the area was fine, but it was literally a cot.
Yeah.
And a 2 foot by 2 foot square table next to it, and that 2 feet was all the extra room you had in the room to walk, and the cot was small enough that when I would try to go to sleep, and I'm not a tall person, I'm like 5'9", my feet hit the wall. I actually had to kind of scrunch up a little bit, and the walls weren't really walls. It was like some big old empty warehouse thingy that they put like rooms in, but the top of the roof was of your room was kind of pitched. And it was kind of open, and I didn't sleep a lot because I could hear my neighbors snoring. That's how thin and close we were to each other. So, yeah, it was a hell of an experience.
Oh.
I highly recommend the Bowery Hotel and Hostel in the East Village of New York. They claimed it in the 40s or something like that. It was like military people would come back, and that's like the word they would say. I'm guessing like as they banged whores or something. I don't think I stayed in the same place that Captain America did.
Icarus is probably worth watching. You should probably finish it. But what a weird thing. The Russians, the level of corruption there in sports is so crazy that, like, I know we've talked about in the past where they're handing the piss through the wall and there's all rooms. It's like a maze and they've got carts. They've got the A sample, the B sample. But the thing that was weird about the documentary, the guy who was like a bike rider, like a semi-professional bike rider, essentially wanted to see how well he could do this race in France if he was on the juice. And cheating like Lance Armstrong did, essentially. And he was in contact with some high-level, you know, American WADA type guy.
He was in contact with the head of, eventually the head of the Russian doping agency, because he needed to find someone that could help him cheat.
Right.
And nobody in America would do it, because we have ethics, I guess, or something. I mean,
the American guy who said he couldn't do it. He was going to get him started and help him. And then he's like, I'll put you in touch with somebody who can. And it's just funny because they've got all these, like, Skype conversations. The two of them are having and all this stuff. But while this guy, I think his name's, like, Dr. Rodchenkov or something, while he's helping this bike rider, his last name's Fogel, Brian Fogel, cheat, essentially, to do better in this race, he's getting, like, busted, and, like, all the walls come crashing down on Rodchenkov, and, like, he comes to the United States, and they're almost, like, harboring him and trying to keep him safe, and he ends up going to the New York Times, and Fogel's helping him, and they're trying to protect him because he's afraid, like, he's one level away from Putin, like,
He was going to die.
It was crazy.
He stayed in Russia.
One of those stories, like, to compare to wrestling with shadows is kind of stupid, but it was that same idea.
I know what you're saying.
They had this story going and a plot for this documentary. Basically, this guy was going to help him use steroids to win a bike race, but it ended up going on this totally different track, off course, and they almost forgot the bike riding story and got totally focused on this whole scandal in Russia and all these news stories and Putin being involved with basically helping Olympic athletes cheat to win medals. It was an interesting documentary and one of those things where it's like they just happened to get in contact with this guy at the right time and had this amazing story because of it.
Yeah, I'm always I find myself fascinated with how Russia gives a shit about sports to that degree.
Right.
It's such an odd level of a politician paying attention to details that are, they don't make any sense. Like, when Barack Obama would make the picks of, like, the NCAA tournaments on ESPN, we'd all be like, oh, look at that. He's like an everyman. But there's, like, that part of you that's like, how much basketball is he really fucking watching? He's the leader of the free world. And I was like, I was okay with it. Like, maybe I would like my leader to be a little more like me and watch sports, but if he doesn't, I understand why. It'd be really weird if not only was Obama watching them, he was actively rigging games. What the fuck? Like, in fairness, I could see Trump doing this. I could absolutely see Trump doing this. But any other president we've ever had would never have happened.
Well, it's just crazy, too, because, like, the KGB's involved and the people are getting murdered. It's like, holy shit.
It's not for sports. It's for games. Yeah. Like, Olympic, like, bullshit sports, too. It's not like they're cheating in sports where you win
money. Well, it's all about the total number of medals. It doesn't matter what sports you get them in.
But I mean, that's the thing. Is like, I could almost understand if there was like some program where they were gonna like cheat to get their athletes into like, we'll say the NHL, and then they're gonna take some of the money. Like, well, maybe they're just poor. Like, they're trying to like win sports that have no money. Bike riding. What the fuck? Why does the government give a shit about a bike ride? And then I was thinking about like how absolutely absurd it was that we've ever had a single congressional hearing or a dollar government money ever spent giving a shit about whether a grown man cheated riding a bike. What the fuck, people?
Yeah.
He's riding a bike. Come on, we shouldn't spend a dime. It should be a crime for a politician to send out a press release on that, because that's a waste of a dollar of taxpayer money. Like, god damn.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's crazy that, I mean, basically there's so much money involved. I mean, in the States and pro sports even, but it's like people are swapping out frozen piss and freezing their piss and shooting needles in their ass, so it's like they can race a little faster, but that's all on, like, our society, because we'll pay a lot of money to go see sports, watch it on TV, and there's millions of dollars on the line. And we talk about it in UFC, too, where it's like one or two fights can make or break a career. It's like if other guys are doing it, you kind of have to do it to be on the same level as them, and you don't want to risk millions of dollars in your kids' college fund and not take something. I mean,
oh, I totally understand athletes
doing it.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Totally get them. I just the idea that the government gives a shit.
Yeah.
My word.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're Lance Armstrong. Yeah, I would fucking put anything into my body to win a bike race if it made me millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. It's the dumbest thing in the world you can make money doing. It's fucking retarded.
But again, it's on us as a culture because we put so much emphasis on it.
No, it's not. We don't take the blame for this one because nobody in America gives a shit about
bike
riding.
I'm just saying
European
pro sports in general.
Like, no, I want to blame the French for this one. They're weirdos. They like to watch grown men.
You
want to
move there. That's like your favorite country.
Well, I'm a weirdo,
okay,
too. I still get to make fun of them for riding bikes. Like, that'd be a real tough one for me. I'd be in France. They'd be like, oh, the Tour of France is coming through. I'd be like, guys, I don't really know if I want to watch this. This is pretty fucking dumb. Like, this is like watching horse racing, only there's no horses and the jockeys are scarecrows.
Do you think it's real popular in France, or is it just like a tradition? Like, do people sit around and watch it in France?
Oh, yeah. You know, they come out. Because remember, they don't have just the Tour de France over in Europe. They got all kinds of tours. Mm-hmm. And the Tour de France isn't even necessarily like the biggest one. Like, Italy's got their own tour. And like, they really, Europeans are into those dumb shit sports that no one cares about. Like, all that bullshit, like, Olympic type of sports. That, like, everybody in America is like, who gives a shit about, like, rowing or any of that stuff? But, like, in England, like, they like that shit. They like their sailing and all that. We're just like, play a real sport where somebody gets hit. You assholes.
Also on the show, we've got Nate Marquardt versus Cesar Ferreira, Rafael Assunção versus Matthew Lopez, and in the opener of the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have Old Joe Lozon versus Old Clay Guida, which is another one that, you know, 10 years ago, you'd be like, holy shit, this fight's going to be freaking awesome. But I don't know what you're going to get out of Lozon or Guida at this point with all the wars.
Actually, I think this one will be okay because I haven't seen either one of them really have that, oh, you're just getting knocked out at the drop of a hat type of thing. And Guida's small enough, smaller, and so yeah, I think that'll actually be, I think that could be pretty good, pretty good.
When did Guida fight last? I feel like he hasn't been real active lately. He beat Eric Koch by unanimous decision back in June.
There you go.
It was 4 months ago.
It was one of those things like, I feel like I've seen him fight recently, but it was probably like an undercard of some bullshit show, and who knows.
In the prelims, there's probably two fights, maybe three you want to look out for. John Dodson versus Marlon Moraes. Two really good bantamweights. Moraes lost his debut. I think it was a decision. He was coming over from World Series of Fighting /PFL as their champion on quite the winning streak, and then lost a split decision to Assunção in his debut. So he needs a win here to, again, another guy to stay relevant. And then John Dodson's still hanging around, doing pretty good. He's won his last fight. He defeated Eddie Wineland by unanimous decision. You do not remember that fight at all. But, yeah, Dodson Moraes. And then we've also got the return of Sage Northcutt, the Golden Retriever, versus Michelle Quiñones. And Angela Hill versus Nina Ansaroff opens up Fox Sports 1.
And Tatiana Suarez versus Vivian Pereira. Suarez won Ultimate Fighter last year for nobody who watched it. But she could be the next champion at 115 pounds.
Really?
I wasn't really paying attention. I started actually doing research for some reason. She's a elite, like two-time bronze medalist in the World Championships of Wrestling. She was a favorite to medal in the Olympics before she was diagnosed with cancer. And then she beat the cancer, and then she went to Ultimate Fighter last year, won it, and she's undefeated. So that's a kind of pedigree where just there aren't any women that really have athleticism like that. I mean, this weighs 115 pounds. That's scary level of dominance. So she could be something. I mean, the fight might suck.
Yeah.
But at least she's a name.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't that familiar with her before.
Yeah, we even have the Court McGee as the headliner on the Fight Pass preview.
You hate Court McGee.
I'm not a fan.
Why. A strong word. I didn't mean
to. Well, it's just like him and Whitaker just kind of blend in together. But still, that's a pretty big name for the Fight Pass undercard on a random show in Virginia. Yeah. This show is really deep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, to the point where I was looking, I'm going, where the fuck did this come from? You're like, you got, Amanda Nunes' lover. You got, Angela Hill's good.
Yeah.
Sage Northcutt's a dog. I like dogs. So, yeah.
I know we were touching on it earlier. Did you watch any of the Ric Flair documentary?
Nah, not a bit.
Yeah. Yet. I mean, it's tough, man. The stuff with Reed dying, it's like, basically, when you see the end of it, it's just like, you feel bad for Flair. It's, like, sad. They, like, at the end, they're showing him in TNA after he loses the match to Michaels, where he was already old and should have retired years before. And it's, like, this great grand send-off, and it's, like, he comes back and he fights in TNA. And he's, like, in the cage, trying to climb up the cage. He can't even get up the cage. And I think it was James Storm is, like, pulling his tights down. His ass is hanging out. And it's, like, that's, like, at the end of his wrestling career. Then his kid dies. Then he gets sick and is in the hospital and he's crying. It's just like super depressing. And at the end, you're like, this guy was damaged early on in his life. They begin it in his childhood where he's adopted and he never feels like he connects with his parents and he always disappointed them. Then he goes away to college and starts drinking, and they tell a story where he's like in like a frat, or he's in this like frat house, and all the girls are coming over for a party or whatever, and he stands, like, up above in a window, just completely naked, and tells the girls to come on in, and they leave. And it's just, like, from then on, it's just, like, partying and drinking. And you wonder if it's just because, you know, he never felt accepted or whatever reason, but as it goes on, he just can't get away from the Ric Flair gimmick that just becomes who he is full-time. And always partying, always drinking, blowing money, doesn't save anything. And, I mean, for a few years, that's probably fun. But when it's been 50 years of your life, it's kind of sad. Like, eventually it's like you grow out of that and you settle down and you get your shit together. And it seems like he regrets a lot of it. He admits at the end that he wasn't a good dad, he wasn't a good husband, that he made a lot of mistakes, but at least he can say he was the best wrestler ever, which there's a very good argument for that. But I'd rather be a decent person than a really good wrestler, but that's just me.
It's sad because you know that he wants to be a normal guy on some level.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing really wrong necessarily just partying your whole life. Like, look, if you can do it, good for you. Like, you get to live, we all look at Ric Flair's life as a fantasy. He's like, I'm going to live a fantasy. You know, it does get old, but, you know, some people are okay with it. But
The thing for me, though, is if you've got other responsibilities, you've got a family at home that kind of needs you around, and your kids are having problems and they're doing drugs. And I'm not blaming Rick for what happened to Reed. Like, that could have happened if, I mean, it could have happened if Flair was a stay-at-home dad and had a normal 9-to-5. That could have happened. It happens to people and kids fuck up or whatever. But at the same time, like, he blames himself for it, and it's like, you know, you don't want to say if you were around more that wouldn't have happened, but you don't know.
The older I get, the more I'm like, you know, we come from our parents, but it's biology. Well, you know, Ric Flair, that gene that made Ric Flair as Ric Flair was in his kids. Uh-huh. And he could have been at home, but if he was at home, he wouldn't be Ric Flair.
Right. But, what's going on with David? You know, you don't ever hear anything about David Flair having any issues. And maybe he does. I don't know.
Because David Flair fucked Stacy. Mm.
Hey, I think it was a fun story. I broke that story.
Really?
Yeah. It was funny. I was doing stuff for the Torch back around that time, and I forget what it was. I think it was a weekend. Me and a couple buddies, we went to an ECW pay-per-view, like in Danbury, Connecticut. And then we went to a Nitro the next night. It was in Providence. So we did Danbury, then we came back to Providence. This was when we were in college. And we found the WCW crew at, like, the hotel bar or whatever. And David Flair and Keebler were, like, all over each other. And I'm like, it's like clear they were a couple. They were holding hands. It was just the two of them. They were talking, and it was like they're clearly a couple. And like I wrote to Keller or whatever, and he like put it out there. So it was funny. That was my story. My big break.
That's real journalism too.
Yeah, random. I hung out like I don't even think I was old enough to drink. Like we couldn't even be in the bar. We were like hanging out in the lobby. Like I was 20. I actually know we were 20 because we had trouble getting a hotel in Connecticut. My buddy had a military ID and they let us like stay at this hotel. It was a long story. But
think about David Flair pulling that off, man. I mean, she's an elite level hot. Like when you're an Eskimo brother with George Clooney, you did something right. There's something weird in those Flair genes because you look at David, he looks like a mope, and he pulled that. I mean, you just tip your hat. You got to tip your hat to that.
Yeah. Obviously, like you can't control your kid's behavior at a certain point, or maybe you never can if you're really bad at it, but. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? People make their own choices and make their own decisions, and you can always argue nature or nurture, and it's some of each, obviously. But at the end of it, you just walk away and you're like, ugh. You didn't feel good for Ric Flair, and you felt like it was sad, and if he had to do it over again, he'd probably do it different too, which is how they played it up.
I like that his real name is, like, Ric Flair.
Yeah, Richard Fleer. I think it's spelled, like, F-L-I-E-H-R.
Yeah. But then, like, I can't remember, but I think his actual, like, his birth name, I remember it being something, like, kind of interesting also. Like, not as cool as the fact that, like, Ricky Steamboat's real name is Richard Blood, which is, like, holy shit, that's an awesome real name.
Well, Dick Blood, I don't know if that's the best name.
I don't know. Anytime your last name is actually Blood.
Yeah, it conjures up not the best image.
Yes, it conjures up the image of Blood.
And Richard. Anyway.
Tampon. Oh, never mind. His birth name was Fred Phillips. That's what it is. Such a weird name. Like, Ric Flair was Fred Phillips. I don't think Fred Phillips would have been the biggest pro wrestler of all time.
Wait, like when he was born, before he was put up for adoption, his name was Fred Phillips?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Think about it, it's kind of sad because when you think of like him as like being the best pro wrestler ever, and it might be the case. It's also the case that I feel like what he did for pro wrestling is gone. Like, what pro wrestling was then, as an art form or whatever, it does not exist.
Right.
What you see today, whether it's the indie guys with all the flips or WWE, that is not what made Ric Flair great. And it's the same way that, like, his lifestyle isn't really something that you see is embraced as much anymore.
Yeah, my buddy just sent me a message. He just watched it, and he goes, it was good. I liked when Flair implies that he didn't find out wrestling was fake until the day of his first match. He's still kayfabing after all these years.
Yeah. I love those guys. Fucking workers to the end, man. They, you know what? They work themselves into blue.
Yeah. moving along here. I know you enjoy the show Westworld. I'm not sure if you saw this, but filming for season 2 has been suspended. HBO says that one of the show's 2 units has been temporarily halted. A cast member with a recurring role had a recent emergency offset. One source tells the injury was sustained by a male member of the cast who fell and hit his head at home. We're told it's serious. HBO says the cast and crew sincerely hopes for a speedy recovery. Do you have any guesses who it might have been?
The black guy.
The scientist guy with the glasses?
Yeah.
Okay, that's, well,
That'd be my guess. I feel like if it was James Marsden or Cyclops or whatever, I would have heard about that. It's like with the same Harris.
Okay.
So, like, those are the main men.
Gotcha. Anthony Hopkins could be an option. He's old. He could fall.
Yeah, but he's not in the show next time.
Oh.
I don't think he... I don't know if he is or not, actually.
Hmm.
I always assumed he's just there for one season. But I don't know.
Interesting. Oh, crap. I'm having tab issues here. Hang on.
I knew it. I knew that.
Try clearing your cookies. What the hell? I want to talk about Rand Paul and his neighbor.
Oh, yeah. That's fucking weird.
I feel like there's something else going on there. Like, so the story right now, the latest I've got, is that Rand Paul has a couple of fractured ribs and maybe like a lacerated lung or something. And the claim right now is that his neighbor tackled him. How the hell do you fall and break your ribs when your 59-year-old neighbor tackles you? Like, it just sounds weird. Either he did more than tackle him, or Rand Paul's just really, really brittle and can crack his ribs that easily. But reading the story more, apparently him and his next-door neighbor, this story's pretty good. I should just read it to you because it totally sounds like Rand Paul being Rand Paul. The history between U.S. Senator Rand Paul and his accused attacker is filled with years of angst and petty arguments over misplaced lawn trimmings and branches. And this is coming from the neighborhood developer. He says, I think this is something that's been festering. I wanted to build a place where everyone could get along, but I guess that's just impossible. Where is it? The two have been neighbors for more than 17 years. There have been disagreements in the past over lawn clippings or who should cut down a tree branch when it's stretched over a property line. The two men live on different streets, but their lots join and their homes are 269 feet apart, according to Google Maps. The neighbor, Paul was probably the hardest person to encourage to follow the homeowners association regulations. Shocking. Of anyone out here, because he has a strong belief in property rights. Can you imagine having to live next to Rand Paul? Fuck. The major problem was getting the house plans approved. He wanted to actually own the property rights and build any kind of house he wanted. He didn't end up doing that, but it was a real struggle. So basically, Rand Paul just sounds like a pain in the ass, and like, he's the type of guy who's like, my property line is right here, I can dump my lawn clippings right to here, and the next door neighbor was just sick of his shit and tackled him, and probably didn't mean to break his ribs, if you're to believe this story.
I celebrate Rand Paul for living the gimmick. You know, he's not full of shit. Like, I always got the impression that he really is like a guy who intellectually is the nerd that would be like, look, this is the property, I'm going to negotiate this, blah, blah, blah. When I first heard this, I'm like, how is this not getting any play? Like,
I've seen it all over the place.
But when it first came out, I was like, wait, a senator, like a very, very famous senator, got attacked outside of his house. Why isn't this should be like the biggest news there is? Like, what the hell? And then we find out the reason is something like out of a, I don't know, out of a sitcom. It's like an episode of Home Improvement we use as the plot.
Well, it's funnier because it's like these two, like, rich as fuck doctors in Kentucky, probably in their mansions, like, fighting over, like, Rand Paul's riding around on his lawnmower and dumping grass in the wrong spot and putting twigs over the fence or whatever the hell's going on. It's, like, just super, like, immature, and I can totally see it happening based on Paul being annoying as fuck.
It's not just him. Like, you see this all the time. Right. Again, it's a classic sitcom trope.
A doctor and a senator would be above it.
No. People getting these weird petty things and... Yeah, it's been 17 years, and he wasn't always a senator, and it's probably just always been there. And but the fact that like nobody's talked, like when I say nobody's talking about it, like everybody's just going, "I'm oh, just a little dispute over some leaves," and he got tackled, and that was that. It's like, yeah, no, Rand Paul always strikes me as being in decent enough shape. You don't break multiple ribs and puncture a lung from getting tackled, and if you are that hurt. I feel like this dude should be in a lot more trouble. Like, you can't just puncture the lung of a senator. You can't just do... What the fuck? Like, that's got to be a crime. I'm not really sure.
I think he got arrested.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just kind of like going, oh, okay. It's like it's truly just a domestic dispute? Really?
I don't know.
I guess. I kind of like that. I like that in my politicians. So I like anytime politicians are involved in really dumb, petty things. I'm like, oh, you are kind of like me. Oh, okay. Like the other day, they were making fun of Trump because I guess he's in Japan. He ordered a hamburger well done with some Heinz ketchup. And like, oh, he's in Japan doing this and that. I'm like, you know what, though? He's the president of the United States. That's a baller alpha male move. Like, you look around going, I'm not going to eat your shit food. No, I want a hamburger. Fucking make it well done. Why? Because I said it's going to be that way, and I know you're all laughing. I mean, I don't care. That's how big mine is. And then he slams on the table and says, take a look at it, North Korea. But then they can't see it because it was cloudy that day.
So he was charged with the neighbor, I'm saying. Kentucky State Police charged Boucher with fourth-degree assault, which is usually reserved for incidents that result in minor injuries. If federal charges are added, Boucher could potentially face 10 years in prison for physically attacking a politician.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was charged and arrested. I don't know.
No. I mean, I'm just talking about 10 years
in
prison.
That sounds aggressive, like, yes.
This is how they write those fucking asshole statutes. I hate that shit. I fucking hate when they have these wide potential prison sentences. Like, if I do a crime, I should know what the prison sentence is in advance. None of this, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years. That's a big fucking difference. Like, if you were to tell me if I steal $1 million, you might get 100 years in jail or 2 months. Well, I want to know because I'm going to chance it if it's 2 months, but not 100 years.
Yeah. Speaking of someone who has been punished, this woman, Julie Briskman, has been fired from her job because she flipped off Donald Trump's motorcade last week. The picture went viral. She's like riding her bike on the side of the road with a helmet on, and the motorcade goes by, and somebody snapped a picture of her just flicking the motorcade off. But I guess where she got into trouble, she made it like her Facebook like background or photo or whatever. So she's...
Well, she embraced it the way any of us would.
I'm so proud. I was riding my bike with one hand and raised my middle finger with the other. So basically the picture went viral. Multiple news outlets picked it up. It appeared in the White House pool report. It was on late night talk shows. Her employer, government contractor Akima LLC, wasn't happy about it, though, and let her go because of it. Do you think she should have been fired? I mean, an employer's got a right, I mean, depending on the state, to fire anybody for any reason if it's at will. But do you think they were right in doing that? Or does she's off, she's not working, she's got freedom of speech, she should be able to do it?
I think it's one of those deals where...
The woman didn't know anyone took the picture.
Look, look,
until she pulls.
She's got to get. You have to get fired when you work for a government contractor and you become famous for flipping off the president. Like, you know, it's just like it just doesn't work that way. Like, that's just one of the. You hear it, you go, you can't do that. Like, if you worked for McDonald's and you flipped off the president of McDonald's and you got fired, everybody would be like, well, yeah, you flipped off your boss. Now, I know it's different because it's the president, but I don't know. Like, I think a lot of it's because she embraced it also. Like, it wasn't just like, if she had just done it and took a picture, be like, look, I don't know what's going on. I'm really sorry. But she's like, dude, look at this. I'm viral. I'm awesome. I don't blame her for. But like, come on. Like, it's one thing to do. It's one thing to do. You really, you reveled in it there. So, you know, really a fault is fucking Secret Service. What the fuck is that? Like, how are you that close on a bicycle to the president?
She looks good.
Yeah, like, what the hell? Like, that, they're supposed to close off, like, 5 city blocks everywhere you go. Oh, that chick's on a bike. Yeah, I don't know. She's not cheating, is
well,
she?
Well, they are shorthanded because Trump already blew through the budget, so.
I liked my joke there, though.
So she wrote, as the photo circulated online, Brisbane decided to tell Akima's human resource department what was happening when she went to work on Monday. By Tuesday, her bosses called her into a meeting and said she had violated the company's social media policy by using the photo as her profile pic on Twitter and Facebook. They told her, we're separating from you. Basically, you cannot have lewd or obscene things in your social media. So they were calling flipping Trump off as obscene. Brisbane, who worked in the marketing and communications at Akima for over 6 months, said she emphasized to the executives that she wasn't on the job when the incident happened and that her social media pages don't mention her employer. They told her that because Akima was a government contractor, the photo could hurt their business. And Virginia is an employment at will state, meaning employers can fire people anytime and for any reason. So legally, I think they were
right. Well, it would be controlled, I think, a lot, and also it's actually federal, it's a government contract, so federal law would probably control that.
Okay.
But I think that, let me put it this way. Do you think Donald Trump is above firing this company because of this? Exactly. Right. Yeah, they had to fire her.
Well, it's funny. She's bringing up, like, other people who work there. She said her colleague was reprimanded for calling someone a fucking libtard asshole on Facebook, but was allowed to delete the post and keep his job. How is that any less obscene than me flipping off the president? How is that fair, she asked. Akima is not responding to requests for comment.
How is that different? Well, it's the president. Like, I know it's Trump, and everybody's really, really mad at him, and I get it, and we think it's different, but look, it's still the president of the United fucking States. Like, you can't. Also, look at her. She didn't give a shit. She likes this attention.
No, she's going to get hired. You know, she'll get a better job based on this.
So everybody wins.
Oh, sometimes. Changing gears here. I know we talked about this a couple weeks ago. A guy at McDonald's was selling drugs through the drive-thru. Apparently, this is a new trend now. Except this one was at Dunkin' Donuts. Police say a Pennsylvania Dunkin' Donuts worker sold methamphetamine and heroin on the job. In some cases, while wearing his drive-thru window headset.
You want to be efficient.
35-year-old Nathan Pizzardi of Denver, Pennsylvania faces felony drug counts. Police say Pizzardi would leave the store and make sales in the parking lot or at a nearby convenience store. They say he sold the drugs while wearing his Dunkin' Donuts uniform and headset. Pizzardi is jailed on $80,000 bail. Court documents don't list an attorney who could comment on his behalf. But apparently this is the new trend for drug dealing. You work at a fast food establishment and either sell it through the drive-thru, maybe the bathroom, or sometimes you just run across the street and do it while wearing uniform and headset.
It's probably healthier.
To run across the street, get a little exercise?
No, to do the heroin than to eat most fast food.
The guy who eats hot dogs at gas stations.
I didn't say I live a healthy life.
Well,
we all know
seem
I'm dying
judgmental
young.
Of people eating fast food. That's all.
Oh, yeah, but I know I didn't say I'm perfect. I'm a hypocrite. I acknowledge my flaws, of which they are legion.
And finally, we have one more story. This one caught my eye because it's just so bizarre.
How bizarre?
This is near Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. A man, a woman, and a six-week-old child were kidnapped by an unknown number of assailants at a Leduc County home at 9:30 a.m. on Monday.
It's the aristocrat.
The man, whose age was not given, was forced into the vehicle's trunk. The kidnapping victims were targeted, and all parties knew each other, police say. While the car was in motion, the man escaped. A short time later, the woman and baby managed to get out of the vehicle as well. None of the three were injured. So these three people were kidnapped. The dad was thrown in the trunk. The woman and baby were in the car with the kidnappers. All three of them managed to escape. You with me so far?
Everybody knows each everybody?
Apparently. A passerby offered assistance and secured all three in his truck. The suspect vehicle rammed the rear of this truck and ended up pushing it into a ditch.
This is a horror movie? The Hills Have Eyes 2?
The police arrested five people after the collision, which happened just 17 minutes after the kidnapping. On Monday, news came out the five who were arrested were completely naked. But have not explained why. Police believe drugs...
What do you mean explain? What's there to explain?
Police believe drugs and alcohol may have been factors in this incident.
That seems a little quick to judge. Let's not jump to conclusions here.
Corporal Laurel Scott reiterated Tuesday that the kidnappers were the ones who were naked, not the three people who were kidnapped. She did not know whether they were naked at the time of the kidnapping or whether they removed their clothes afterwards.
That would be so much better. It would be so fucking awesome. They kidnap somebody, they kidnap this family, the family escapes, and they're like, oh shit, they all rip off all of their clothes and they say, hey, let's chase after them now.
According to Environment Canada, the temperature Monday morning at nearby Edmonton International Airport was negative 12 degrees Celsius with a wind chill of negative 18. Three adults remained in police custody Tuesday. Two youth were released without charges. Charges are pending against the adults for kidnapping and resisting arrest. There were five naked people who kidnapped three people, including a baby. All five were naked, and two of the five kidnappers were minors, and it was negative 18 degrees out. The three people who were kidnapped, including the baby, escaped the moving car, got picked up in another car. The kidnappers came up and plowed into the truck that picked up the kidnapped people. This story is insane. And why are they naked? It's the weirdest story I've ever seen in my life.
Fucking Canadians.
George St. Pierre doesn't do stuff like this.
He's French-Canadian. What are you going to do with them? You're all just a bunch of snow fuckers up there. Can't get enough of it. They're all naked with their children kidnapping people. I don't know. I wonder at what point of their night somebody said, you know, I think this is going to be a one for the record books. Like, is it when you're hanging out with your, we'll say, mom and dad and your brother and some other kid? Is when you're all hanging out and you're going, huh, they're smoking something funny up there. That's weird. Or is it when that mom and dad are like, hey, let's just take off all of our clothes. And then everybody does it. And then you're all just sitting in the car, naked, and it's cold out. And then somebody's like, hey, what should you do now? Get some clothes now. Some drive through? Get some heroin at the Dunkin' Donuts? No. Go for a bike ride? No. Let's go kidnap some people. Yeah. And then you kidnap some people, and you sit there and you go, huh, I thought that when we got naked and drove around for a while, that was going to be the part of the night where I went, well, that was the night we'd never forget. We added in some kidnapping. Then you're like, yeah, look at that. All right. Nobody's ever going to forget the night when you were driving around naked with a bunch of other people in a car and you kidnapped some strangers. And then the strangers escape from the moving car. And suddenly you're going, well, we've outdone ourselves because the victims have done a tuck and roll out of a moving vehicle.
The dad got out of the trunk. How the fuck do you get out of a trunk?
They escaped out of the trunk like they're in like the Big Lebowski or something. I don't know. And then you're like, well, okay. We set a record when we drove around naked. That was different. And we set a record when we drove around naked and kidnapped someone. And I thought, wow, that's going to be a great chapter in the old memoir. And then I thought, well, we set a record when we drove around naked, kidnapped somebody, and they escaped by jumping out of the trunk in a moving car. I thought, fuck, we got our closer. And then Johnny over there behind the wheel said, fuck it, let's go after him. Found him in another car and said, there's an embankment. Let's just ram everybody off the road. And then some poor cop shows up, and he's got to be seeing one car full of naked people, another car full of some guy going, they kidnapped me. And when you're a cop and some guy's saying, they kidnapped me, and you're seeing naked people, I don't know if you think that the naked people did it. Also, how do you kidnap somebody when you're naked? What are you using? You can't hide a gun. You just got to walk up, and like, if I see somebody naked, like, I don't get, unless you're attractive, I don't get near naked people. Like, if you're out on your own, like, in the Canadian wilderness, and five naked people start walking towards you, you're going to see them from far enough away that you're going to be like, fuck this, I'm getting out of here. Like, you're not going to stand around and be like, huh, look at that, five naked Canadians. You don't see that every day, do you? And that's the kicker out of all this, is that they're Canadian. What the fuck is Canadians? They're not supposed to do this. They're the nice ones. So, yeah, good for you, Canada.
This is good. I found another story on it, and it says, Derek Scott was driving to a job site south of Edmonton when he got a call about an accident involving one of his work trucks, a stolen baby, and a bunch of naked people. Can you imagine getting that call? Hey, I'm really sorry. The truck got ruined. Somebody crashed into us, but there was a stolen baby and a bunch of naked people. You should probably just come down to Route 67. it's like right between exit 82 and 83, headed north. Just you got to get down here. I need a hand with the cops and the paperwork. Like,
and I guarantee you that when he got the call of, hey, yeah, we got an incident down here, naked people and a stolen baby and a car crash. Zero chance. You give that guy 100 years and a million guesses, he ain't coming up with that story. He ain't gonna start off with, well, I bet that it was five people that just got naked for the hell of it, and then they kidnapped a family, kidnapped a baby and a dad, and then I bet, you know, you wouldn't pick any of those details.
The guy said, when he got there, one guy had to do the walk of shame in front of everybody. Then two more women did the walk of shame in front of everybody. Then the one lady was the last to be removed. She put up the biggest fight. It was a pretty wild fight. It took five people to get her out of the car. He said all the suspects had their hands cuffed behind their backs. There was no covering.
I think apparently they're calling, well, it's five, and then, yeah, there you go, at the very end. Why didn't we see that coming? Because, of course, it's got to be meth or PCP or something. And then, yeah, old grandma at the end was just fucking tough old bird. Took five of us to get that naked lady who was handcuffed out of a car.
Well, the other thing I picture it as Mounties trying to get him out of the car, too. Like a team of five Mounties trying to get this naked lady out. So a 27-year-old man and two women, 35 and 30, are to appear Thursday in Leduc Court on charges of kidnapping and resisting arrest. Two teenage girls were released without charges. So you had one guy.
That dude had the best fucking day. He did. He really does have the best story for the rest of his life. When he's in prison, they're gonna look at him and be like, "Damn, like, damn."
Why do I have a feeling Ric Flair was in a similar situation when he was 27? We just didn't hear about it.
57. I guarantee Ric Flair stole at least one baby in his life.
It's unbelievable.
Woo!
Huh. Anyway, I do have one last local story. I know I said finally, but this is happening in my neck of the woods. Police, this is on Cape, police are investigating a report that a man hurled a cup of clam chowder at a stranger's vehicle. Last Sunday, November 5th, a woman pulled her Jeep into the parking lot of a local business. She told the police that as she was pulling in, a man who had been sitting stood up and threw his clam chowder at her car. "Why did you just do this?" she asked the man. "We don't even know each other." "Damn right we don't know each other," the man replied. "This is the best $5 I have ever spent on chowder." The man then got into his car and drove away. The woman managed to take down the man's license plate, which she gave to police. Based on the plate info, police learned that the same man was being sought in Mashpee and New Bedford in connection to road rage incidents. Police said they have identified the car that the man left in, but that no one has been charged with anything at this point. Like, a very dull story compared to the Edmonton story, but that's like classic Cape Cod, throwing a cup of chowder at the car next to you because they parked too close.
Really? Like, throwing clam chowder is a thing?
No. But clam chowder, New England clam chowder, it's like a staple of New England cuisine. Like, every restaurant around here has clam chowder. But the question is, why would you choose to throw that at a car that pulled in next to you? It's fucking weird.
I'm curious as, you know, was everybody wearing their clothes?
Everyone was dressed.
Is there a baby involved?
This is a dull story. It just happened, like, within miles of my house. That's why I left.
Maybe they could, if only somebody was riding a bicycle.
Oh, well.
Anything to look forward to at halfguarded.com this week?
There's nothing to look forward to in life.
Okay, on that note, thank you for listening. We will be back next week. Maybe someone will look forward to that. I'll be back next week. I can't speak for you, but maybe that'll be the Michael Coughlin Memorial Show. On that note, thank you for listening. You can, again, check us out at halfguarded.com. There's a half-guarded Twitter. There's a Facebook page. There's a weird Instagram thing with weird political stuff Mike likes to do. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Get up, cocksuck, because it's all over. Listen, we had a rough couple of months. Fucking Katrina's cousin Maria. The other one, Puerto Rico, Houston. Fucking...